download from the Metropolitan Planning Council, Mary Sue Barron, filmmaker and director Rebecca Miller, and Chicago Shakespeare Theater's Barbara Gaines. And now, here's your host, a man who may have overdressed today, Justin Kaufman.
I could have sworn I heard Paul Conrad this morning say it was turtleneck weather. It apparently is not. But I guess I could hit a Beat Poets free cafe. Got to look like Mike Myers, and so I married an axe murderer. Welcome to the download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. What a beautiful, beautiful day in Chicago. And we are very happy to be with you throughout the evening here. Michigan Avenue is still bustling. It looks great. It feels great. And it's great to be here on the radio with you. All right. Coming up tonight, got a wonderful show. Mary Sue Barrett's going to be here. She's the president of the Metropolitan Planning Council. You know, I'm excited to talk with Mary Sue. I haven't talked to her on the download since I've come over here. But, you know, as you saw earlier this week, the reports about Chicago shrinking, we're losing population. This isn't new. This has been something that's been happening for a while. So why are people leaving the Chicagoland area? What is it? The economy? Is it transportation? Is it the news, the stories of violence? What is it that keeps people from staying here in Chicago? So we'll talk with Mary Sue Barrett about development, the economy, and keeping people here in Chicago. Coming up at 8 o'clock, my guest at the big table is a filmmaker, writer, director. Her new movie, Maggie's Plan, stars Greta Gerwig and Ethan Hawke and Julianne Moore, who's just amazing in this movie. Rebecca Miller is my guest tonight. She's Arthur Miller's daughter. She's also married to Daniel Day-Lewis. We'll talk with Rebecca Miller, who's an independent filmmaker who's done some great work in her career about this film, which is getting great reviews, and it's going to be the biggest release to date for her. She's done a lot of great stuff, and she's been at Sundance, and she's had some great success in her career. But this one is the one that people are looking at for a breakout hit for Rebecca Miller. Also coming up, we're going to talk about Shakespeare and war. Tug of War, specifically. It's Shakespeare 400. This is celebrating the 400th year of Shakespeare. Barbara Gaines is going to come by. Barbara Gaines, of course, running. She's the artistic director over at the Chicago Shakespeare Theater, has been for years. We're going to talk to her about her new show.
The Top 5 at 5.
That's pretty cool. Not sure where that came from. Wow. The instant replay machine's on. Go ahead.
Now we have to do it. Top 5 at 5.
Does that mean we have to do it?
Yeah.
Number 5. Okay, did you hear Donald Trump today? That's my pro-con show. I don't even know where that came from. Off the board. Yeah, whatever. Anyway, coming up as well, we're going to have a picnic. It's Tuesday night, 10 o'clock. I'm very excited to say that Joel Reese is going to be joining us. He writes for Baseball Prospectus Wrigleyville, and he will be here. And we're going to give nicknames to two more of the 2016 Chicago Cubs. I'm very excited to say that this has been a successful segment. You call us up, 312-981-7200, with your nickname ideas. Esmeralda Leon will pick it, and you will get a prize. It's pretty fun. Tonight, Pedro Strop and Addison Russell. Woo, prime time. We're in the prime time now. Pedro Strop and Addison Russell. You already got one?
This is Rob Martier up there looking, doing some research, finding out where Addison Russell went to college.
He is really the man behind all the nickname information, the research that you need.
He's the best.
Well, I like to dig.
You do?
I like to dig deep.
So did you hear I got Pedro Strop.
Strop.
And Addison Russell tonight.
All right.
So that gives you a couple hours.
That
gives you a couple hours to work on the research.
Forget breaking news. I mean, you know.
Who needs it, right?
I mean, if something happens to Mayor Emanuel, forget about it.
Forget it.
I'm busy.
We're doing nicknames for the 2016 Cubs. All right, all that tonight. News, weather, and traffic with Rob Martier and Esmeralda Leon. Production provided by Pete Zimmerman. I'm Justin Kaufman, and this here is The Download, a show about Chicago starring those who know it well. Take a quick break. When we come back, it's time for the carryout. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, let's get started tonight with the carryout. This, of course, is our nightly segment where I read the newspaper so you at home, you don't have to. Here are today's top stories. Well, the Sun-Times tells us that the parking meters in downtown parking garages took in over $150 million last year. But Chicago? Nope. Didn't see a penny. That's right. It's all privatized. Mayor Daley privatized those services in an effort to bring money to the city so he could have some more fancy, rich foie gras parties before he left. Now, we can't afford math classes. If I haven't said it lately, thanks again, Mayor. You're the best. Now it's time for the Download Springfield Report. Well, it's the final week of the spring session, and so much got... They didn't even pass, like, something like a proclamation? Nothing? Jeez. That was a waste. Well, that's been the Download Springfield Report. Drew Peterson is in a courtroom today. You know, Drew Peterson is to the news media as the Bodines are to Summerfest. It's foolproof. So wake me up if we know he killed his last wife, because the idea that a cellmate is snitching seems like a stretch, right? Besides, isn't there a Bill Cosby courthouse perp walk to cover? Or instead, let's talk about the capybara that's loose in Toronto. A capybara. Those things are like human-sized squirrels. Oh, thanks. Get a shot of that thing chewing on a bumper, and then you got ratings gold. Then you don't need Drew Peterson anymore. Former Education Secretary of the Nation, Arnie Duncan, was named to the Lucas Museum Board today. Not sure what that means. Maybe he'll try to turn around the museum like he did CPS. Maybe instead of funding the museum, he'll fund for-profit versions of the museum in the same neighborhoods, forcing the original Lucas Museum to close, depreciating the neighborhood. Wait, are we still talking about Star Wars, right? Right. Breaking news, TSA says security lines at O'Hare are down to 15 minutes, thanks to the influx of new agents. But as anyone who has been to a Target, you know that once Sean takes that break and Kathleen goes back to customer service, all hell's going to break loose. Uber announced a partnership with Toyota today. Toyota will invest in the rideshare company and also lease cars. Yep, that's right. Toyota, Uber. So essentially, Uber is the color yellow away from being a cab. Let's just call it out. No, it's an app. No, it's a cab. The rapper Twista had drug charges dropped today. I didn't read past the headline, but my guess is the drug was speed. Anyone? Oh, it was weed? Okay, sorry. It was weed. In weather, it's too nice out today. I find this to be suspicious. Do you? Like there's a weather machine somewhere. It just doesn't feel right. In sports, Chris Sale goes for his league-leading 10th win tonight. He could be the first pitcher since 1900 to win his first 10 decisions. You know what? They wore some pretty baggy pants back in 1900, so that's saying something. The Sox have been slumping. They no longer are a top team in the AL. Actually, they're fourth now, behind Seattle. Seattle? Baseball? Yeah, we only use grass-fed wooden bats. Come on. You do better than Seattle. The Cubs lost to the Cards last night. The Cardinals got a walk-off homer to win it, and then danced around for like an hour like they just won the World Series. Tonight, the Cubs will get Jason Hayward back after missing some time. Interesting tidbit with the Cubs. They're still the best. That's the tidbit. It's not much of a tidbit. It's just fact. They're the best. There's also a movement to force the Cubs and Sox to sync up their pitching schedules. So when they play in July, it'll be Jake Arrieta versus Chris Sale. The Cubs and Sox could make that happen if they wanted to. And I think Chicago wants it. So think about the fans. No, better yet, think about the children. You don't hate children, do you? Wait. I take that back, Kenny Williams. We all know you hate children. Hashtag Team Drake. In football news, it was announced today that former defensive lineman Bubba Smith had CTE. He died a few years back. Are they sure that he got that from collisions on the football field or playing Hightower in the Police Academy movies? Either way, it's bad for the brain. And finally tonight, it's Bob Dylan's birthday. In honor of the legendary musician, I will finish this sentence by talking just like him. How does it feel? That's the carry out for May 24, 2015. Half price on Hurricanes. Keep going with the show. You can't stop talking like this. Someone hit me in the back. I thought that was pretty good. I don't know about you guys, but maybe I have a future in Bob Dylan impersonations. Karaoke. I should invent Bob Dylan karaoke. Coming up, we're going to talk about why people are leaving Chicago and really get a status check on the economy, development, transportation, and all things metropolitan. We'll talk with Mary Sue Barrett from the Metropolitan Planning Council when we return. Stay with us. All right, it's a download here on WGN. Coming up, we're going to talk with Mary Sue Barrett, the president of the Metropolitan Planning Council, talk about why Chicago is shrinking. That's coming up after the news. Rob Martier, how are you, my man?
I am busy. I am busy looking up Pedro Strop. I'm already deep. I'm already so deep into this.
They're already coming through on text, so we might have a winner here. Pedro Strop and Addison Russell. Addison Russell is going to be easy to come up with a nickname for because he's got the name Addison. I mean, he plays for the Cubs.
Right.
And his name. So, I would challenge Download Nation to dig deep on that one because we're not going to accept an Addison and Clark kind of, you know. I've already got two that were in there. Really, really, I mean, this is good, but I think we should go deeper. Redline.
You know,
that's pretty good, right? That's pretty good. But
it's good. You've got a lot of smart listeners, but I don't know if they're quite up to the challenge that I'm ready to present them with tonight. I just don't think they can do it. We'll see.
All right. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman with you till 11 o'clock tonight. Coming up at 8 o'clock, we are going to talk with Rebecca Miller. Rebecca Miller is a filmmaker. Her new film, Maggie's Plan, is out in theaters this weekend. Stars Greta Gerwig, Ethan Hawke, Julianne Moore. Rebecca Miller is Arthur Miller's daughter. She is quite a career herself working in film. We'll talk with Rebecca Miller coming up at the big table at 8 o'clock. Well, the big news out of this week is that Chicago is losing population. Almost 3,000 people left Chicago, and we were one of the only big cities in America that didn't gain population. But the hidden story here is that this is nothing new. We've been steadily declining over the past few years. What's making people leave the Windy City? Is it the economy, violence, transportation issues, the sports teams? Mary Sue Barrett is the president of the Metropolitan Planning Council, a nonprofit that helps governments and businesses and communities work together to tackle Chicago area planning and development challenges. Mary Sue, thanks for being here. Appreciate it.
Glad to be here, Justin.
So when you see that come out this week, that we're losing population and the fervor around it, at the MPC, what's the thought? I mean, this is something you guys have seen coming, and it is something that Chicago has experienced in the last couple of years.
It is something that's been creeping up on us, and I think Chicagoans deal with some of the symptoms individually, but perhaps the census numbers putting us dead last among the top 20 cities is a wake-up call, and it's sparking conversation that, frankly, we just need to have. We have so many assets, and the downtown is thriving, attracting some new companies, technology-based companies. Mm-hmm. There's some successes that we should focus on, but the net result, 3,000 less people in the city, 6,000 less in the region, 22,000 less in Illinois. Bottom of the list across the board. So we absolutely have to pick that apart and figure it out.
That's amazing. I did not know the stat that they were 20th, dead last in terms of major American cities. Well, I mean, from your vantage point, from your seat, what is the reason? I mean, is there one thing, or is it sort of death by 1,000 cuts here?
Well, the trend is not just in the last year. This loss of 3,000 residents of Chicago or 6,000 in our region, that's a snapshot of 2014 to 2015. Mm-hmm. And if you look back over a decade, take us back to 2005, we have lost a lot of people in those years that spanned the recession. So from 2005 to 2010, we lost 54,000 people. It's been a little better news since 2010. So these last 5 years, we've gained 23,000, but net loss. So let's not, you know, kind of hold grasp at straws and say, oh, well, right, it's trending. We're not saving the middle class and giving them a reason to stay. We have challenges that some of our counterpart cities don't have. And I think the answer is complicated, but we've got the energy and the leadership, I think, to put those pieces together. For example, our transit network is, when you think about where people want to live, whether you're talking millennials or young families or senior citizens, it brings convenience and accessibility, mm-hmm, vibrancy to neighborhoods, walkable destinations. And yet we've actually been losing population even by transit. So there's a lot of things we can change.
Because and maybe a good sort of route to sort of go on this conversation is taking apart some of those old wives' tales, if you will, about Chicago and what, you know, people come here for or what's good. Like, for instance, transportation. I've always known Chicago to be world class when it comes to the transport. Now obviously infrastructure and keeping that up has ebbed and flowed over the years. But our public transit system, our bus grid, even our Metra trains is better than some of the cities that are on that same list that we are dead last in. So it's not necessarily that people can't get to and from in this city.
Well, I think it's more of a mixed picture than that. We're the third biggest city, but we do have the second biggest transit system. So, yeah, chalk up a victory for us, but we've been neglecting it. So when we look at New York City, they have been investing much more locally, much more as a state, both in maintaining what they've got and then expanding services, because population shifts and you want to give people transit choices really no matter where they live. Today, people talk about a suburb-to-suburb commute. Very difficult to use transit between that. The reverse commute is tough. And so it's not just neighborhoods that are struggling economically where the development isn't happening hubbed around transit. Even in neighborhoods that you would expect to be growing near transit, places like Lincoln Square, Lincoln Park, they're losing population near transit too. So one of the positive changes that the city of Chicago did just last fall was to provide some new rewards for investors and developers to build more intensive projects right around transit, because that's where the value is.
Yeah, but I mean, the sort of juxtaposition of that is that you read in the newspaper, you read stories about, you know, gentrification. Some of these neighborhoods, you know, the property that's near transportation, the rents are going through the roof. So how does the city make sure that it's not just, you know, sort of richer or upper class people that are living close to transportation and being a part of the city of Chicago?
Very fair question. And there's a lot of fear around this issue, which is one of the reasons why the Metropolitan Planning Council built a Grow Chicago calculator to help communities zoom in on their portion of the city and really see what the difference would be if you build something that's two stories or three stories versus something that's 6 to 8 stories. Mm-hmm. And what the difference means is actually it can bring the amenities, the shopping and the other assets that
you want. If you build a bigger
building,
you have the retail on the bottom, things like that.
You have demand. And the car ownership is at 50% or less in so many communities. So these fears, legitimate fears, turn out to not be born out. And when you help people go through that process of seeing, well, I want to have a walkable community and I want retail nearby, but I don't want to have any development, mm-hmm, be increased in my area, you realize that they're actually kind of arguing against themselves. The other issue you brought up is affordability. And it turns out the census divides the city into 77 community areas. So these are pretty small areas, smaller even than wards, because we have 50 wards. Mm-hmm. Of those 77, only 9 have experienced gentrification over the last decade, but 45 of them have experienced deepening poverty. So that's not to dismiss gentrification. It's just not the main story that's being written in Chicago. The main story is about poverty and how we address that.
Now, I mean, obviously, poverty is going to lead us to a conversation about the economy and jobs. I mean, could we look into that area to why people are leaving here? Because it used to be that Chicagoans would come from the university. I mean, people from all over the Midwest, when the Big Ten, would move to Chicago because they would get their first job or they get the opportunity to work here in Chicago, and they'd stay and they'd sort of clamp down and they'd they sort of have roots here in Chicago. Is that still happening? Are we seeing people come to Chicago for jobs? Are jobs readily available for not only people coming out from universities, but for people who are maybe middle class or below?
It is something to be proud of that we have higher educational attainment stats in Chicago than most Midwestern places. So there's a lot of college-educated people here, and that's both those that we graduate right here and that stay, but also across the Great Lakes, across the Midwest, we're a magnet. People want to come here for job opportunities right after they graduate. A big plus. They might settle in, you know, some of the trendier neighborhoods, but then life moves on, and you want to advance in your career. You might be settling down, starting a family, and thinking about issues of advancement, home value, school quality, mm-hmm. public safety. And that's where things are starting to break apart. And this is not a race-divided phenomenon. You see an exodus of the middle-class African-American. You see a loss of white young professionals. And what we have to be concerned about is creating opportunity. These tech companies that want to be downtown, that's terrific. But they need to have, and our service economy and our anchor institutions like hospitals all need to have, a range of workers by skill and by experience. And so we have to be a city for all,
right,
building around our transit system, being concerned about divisions by race and class. Those are all things that sometimes we have perhaps a separate conversation. You got the economic development pros in this corner, and you got the people who are concerned about isolation and inequality in different corners. But it really is the same issue.
Mary Sue Barrett is the president of the Metropolitan Planning Council. It's a nonprofit that helps governments, businesses, and communities work together. You know what? Let's take a quick break. And we come back, I want to talk about downtown versus the neighborhoods. We haven't talked about that. I also want to talk about, where are these people going? We haven't gotten into that. Mary Sue Barrett, my guest tonight. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Mary Sue Barrett's here. She's the president of the Metropolitan Planning Council. We're talking about why people are leaving Chicago. You know, I'm interested in this concept of common sense. I mean, for us in the, you know, civilians who are just reading the newspaper and watching the 10 o'clock news, we kind of get an understanding that the city is having a serious crime wave. Violence is prevail. I mean, it's everywhere. It's so prevalent. We also notice that Chicago is getting really, really expensive to live. We also know that from a politician's standpoint, from a political standpoint, there's no budget. And we feel like we have, you know, we've lost a little bit of faith in our leaders. Are those the same kind of issues that play out in the numbers that are sort of being brought out of the stuff that we're seeing about people leaving?
I think it is, Justin. The analogy of the Tale of Two Cities, I think, fits here, as well as we can simultaneously celebrate some great things about our city. We're rediscovering our riverfront. There's a lot of excitement about not just downtown, but in the neighborhoods, all of the amenities that Chicago has. And I was looking at a map. My board chair is with Jones Lang LaSalle, a real estate firm, and they showed all the companies that relocated divisions or headquarters downtown mm-hmm. in the last few years. It's driving our commercial office healthy statistics. So 20 years ago, those arrows would have been in exactly
right.
the opposite direction.
Right.
So those are things to celebrate. There's lots of pluses, our cultural, educational institutions. And yet, a few weeks ago, the New York Times worked with a Kaiser Family Foundation to do a survey that made a big splash in encapsulating the opinions of Chicagoans about how they're feeling. And it is uneasiness. One headline that really struck me was framed this way. It said, Black Chicagoans, isolation, frustration, worry. You know, that's a pretty heavy trio.
Right. Those are the words they're leading with, right?
Absolutely. And it's true that in that poll, 44% of Black respondents said that their neighborhood was not a great place to raise kids, and that was true of only 16% of whites. So there's a confidence game mm. that's playing out differently. We're losing middle class that are fearful of school quality. It's kind of the lottery game Your listeners might want to check out our website, which is metroplanning.org. One of my colleagues, Marisa Novarez, just posted a series about the middle class, and it helps you get your arms around the fact that it's you know, spinning the roulette wheel. You know, you're taking a gamble, and when people move, sometimes it's about moving for certainty. So they like all of the things that are here in Chicago, but those pluses are feeling shaky.
We've been told for years here in Chicago that a healthy downtown, a thriving downtown, a downtown that's going to attract tourism and, as we see here on Michigan Avenue, almost has the same, you know, sort of trickle-down effect to the neighborhoods. Is that happening? Are we seeing the same kind of Chicago that we see here on Michigan Avenue playing out, even in some of the more, in Wicker Park and Bucktown, or, you know, Logan Square, or even some of the neighborhoods, Rogers Park and Auburn Gresham? Like, tell me about that sort of scenario of downtown sort of helping the neighborhoods.
That is true, but it's not enough to stabilize the city and set us back on a path of growth. If we're shrinking our population, you know, from 2.8 now to 2.7 million, at some point we can't afford to pay for all the great things here. And so that can't be all on the back of downtown. The only neighborhoods that added population outside of the central area and the loop, the South Loop, the West Loop did add population were a cluster of a few neighborhoods near Midway Airport. So immigration fueled higher rates of births in Latino families in these Southwest Side neighborhoods. Those were the only two. Mm. And so some of these attractive communities, again, are losing population. So what we're hearing from people is that they've got dreams that they want to have responded to for their neighborhoods. That's why we're focusing on, you know, if you've got 15,000 vacant lots in the city of Chicago, this Grow Chicago calculator helps you zoom in and focus on the ones that have the greatest potential. And then you build out from there. So the story, I think, is an uneven one in neighborhoods. I think many communities understand that there is a shared destiny. I want to underline how important that is. In fact, the city of Chicago just in the last few days has moved forward with a proposal to capture more value in the downtown real estate and reserve it in a neighborhood opportunity fund. That kind of linked destiny is, I think, on the right track. But unless we also have growth and opportunity in our neighborhoods, it doesn't add up.
Okay, so, you know, right now we're in the final week of the Springfield session. We've had so much made of the fact that we are in a budget stalemate. We have had so much made about our debt, pension debt. Do these kind of stories, do they play into these numbers about people leaving Chicago? Or, I mean, the number one, the first part of this question is, you know, do people use that in decisions to leaving the politics of the city? And the second, you know, talk about tax, because is Illinois, I'm always confused by this. I'm always confused. Are we taxed enough? Are we not taxed enough? Are we the worst? Are we the best? Like, I feel like, I mean, from a citizen of the state of Illinois, how are we taxed?
It depends who you talk to and what statistics they're using, right?
Exactly, right?
Well, to the first part of your question that, are people citing the state budget impasse, our inability to have a budget after all of these months, as something that's made eroding their confidence? You bet. It's a big problem. So you can have this thriving central area and a city that's, you know, in many ways the envy of other places, and yet people would say in the same breath, I'd like to stay, but I can't stay in a place that's, you know, not fixing its infrastructure and doesn't know how it's going to pay for its schools in September. That's a lot of instability for people who just want to, you know, live their lives and count on government to work on those kinds of things.
Right.
So we have a system in Illinois that is unique in this respect. We rely more on property taxes to pay for local services. It's led to many, many governments, many single-purpose governments, and guess what? Confusion on the part of your average Joe who...
Me.
Yes. Average Justin who
average
says...
Average Justin.
You know, if you live in the suburbs and you have 16 taxing districts, number one, you don't know who to hold accountable. You may be so discouraged you might not vote. We're seeing both of those things happen. And so who's responsible for our roads? Well, it's the state, the tollway, counties, townships in some cases, city. And, you know, when your car hits that pothole and you have a $500 bill, yeah. you just want to know
whose fault is it?
Right. So we did an assessment, actually, of how far behind are we exactly on this transportation infrastructure? You mentioned before it's one of our core strengths historically. Right. So what we do is this boom and bust cycle. So we do a big package that lasts for 5 years every 10 years. Okay. And so it's very inefficient, and then things end up costing you more down the road. So the price tag is $43 billion over 10 years. Big number, but it turns out that we are paying more in delays and repairs today than we would if we would just...
We just didn't do it this way.
Buck up and invest. And those, that's both maintenance and enhancements. Like,
we're gonna,
the red line.
You're going to come back and we're going to talk more about that part. Because that I feel, is the part that I think most people who are listening here want to talk about how they actually... how what we're investing in, infrastructure, and how we're being taxed. Mary Sue Barrett's the president of the Metropolitan Planning Council. Last question, real quick. Where are the people going?
Not one place. If you looked at a map, there are out migration to all of our surrounding cities and states. And then there's a big blob in Texas because of Texas's job growth. That's been a magnet for a number of Illinoisans.
Okay.
But, you know, there's people who are bleeding out to the communities all in surrounding areas in search of stability and job growth and fewer worries. But I want to end on a positive note, which is that we've got the pieces. We can put them together to grow Chicago.
All right. I like that. I like the positive. We'll continue the conversation. Mary Sue Barrett is the president of the Metropolitan Planning Council. She joined me tonight. Mary Sue, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, a new romantic comedy hits theaters this week. It's called Maggie's Plan, and it stars Greta Gerwig, Ethan Hawke, Bill Hader, Julianne Moore. It's the fifth film from director Rebecca Miller, who not only directed the movie but adapted it from chapters from a friend's novel. It's a comedy about modern romance, trying to control destiny, and the complicated lives that are afforded from living in this day, this age, this time. In other words, what do? When you suspect your man and his ex-wife are actually perfect for each other. Wow. Rebecca Miller is the writer and filmmaker of this film, as well as The Ballad of Jack and Rose, The Private Lives of Pippa Lee. It's my honor to have Rebecca Miller at the big table tonight. Rebecca, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
What drew you to taking these chapters and turning it into a movie?
My friend Karen Rinaldi sent me the chapters, and she said, I have a feeling that Maggie's story might be a good movie, and I read the chapters. And I thought, wow, this could be a great premise. And I started working out from there. I was looking for something on the more funny side and something to be set in New York, and it fit the bill.
Obviously, you're a novelist, and you've been able to write screenplays and direct films. Was there something easy, difficult in the process of taking some unfinished work and trying to turn it into a film?
Well, I was lucky enough to be able to talk to Karen Rinaldi because she's a really good friend of mine. So I was able to kind of pick her brain about where some of these ideas came from, since I did change quite a lot. So I wanted to know what to change, what to keep, where the roots were. I guess it made it easier in a way because I'm not used to being sort of given the hook. I did end up building the characters on my own, but the hook, the idea of something where you have a concept in the center, I'd never been given that before. And it was so, in some ways it made it harder, in some ways it made it easier. I knew that it was perfect for a kind of screwball romantic comedy of the sort of type of like the 1940s that I love so much, Preston Sturges and, you know, Philadelphia Story and all those wonderful movies. It reminded me a little bit of that kind of tone. So I tried to go for something like a really modern take on that.
Well, the movie starts, I mean, right away, the first scene out the gate, Maggie declares her intention to have a baby, and is not in a committed relationship. She's like, this is the plan for my life. I'm ready. She's young. She's like, I want to have a baby, and she's trying to figure out the right partners. Why start the movie there? I mean, obviously, that's a big part of it, but it was so crisp, and I love the concept of it. It's just sort of like, right away, we're right into it.
Yeah, boom, you're right in the middle of it. Well, I mean, part of it is that she's got this plan to have a baby with a donor who's a math major that she went to college with, and that she really didn't know that well, but has a fairly odd personality. But as she says, you know, no one's perfect. And the thing is that ultimately those plans get quickly derailed when she meets John. So, and then she falls into this much more kind of romantic relationship, and then that ends up being derailed, and then she goes in another way. So she keeps making plans, thinking she knows where she's going. Every time she thinks she knows where she's going, a curveball gets thrown.
Yeah, let's talk about Maggie, because that seems to be the heart and soul of her, is that she does really, at her core, want to plan things out. She's ready to go. And curveballs throughout this movie keep coming to her, and she comes up with a new plan. But there is something about her that is really stated. But also, you know, by the end of the movie, you really do feel that, you know, she could be like anybody in the sense that we all have plans and things happen.
Yeah, I think she's very relatable. I think everybody has to plan a little bit just to live, just to get out of bed and go to work or go anywhere. You have to plan a little bit. And then there are the people who want to plan for everyone else's good. And that's Maggie's situation. But I mean, I think, you know, somebody was saying to me the other day, I've been Maggied, which is kind of like perfect. It's like somebody who's just bossed you into doing something for your own good. You know, I think everybody knows a Maggie or somebody, or they may themselves have a bit of Maggie in them. And she's a really kind of adorable character. You can't really hate her because she really does try to do everything for other people's own good. It's just that she goes way past what normal people would do, yeah. I would say.
But I mean, it's such a great complex character because, you know, at the beginning, by stating her plan and starting the movie strong with this is my plan, this is what I'm going to do, you see the roadblocks, you know, coming as the viewer. You see it. Here comes Ethan Hawke. Here comes other people in the movie and in other situations. And you watch her kind of persevere or overcome those kind of things. It makes for a very complex character.
Absolutely. I think she is a complex character because she's on the one hand, she can be, you could see her as manipulative, but she's also kind of has a real innocence about her and a goodness about her. And, you know, the fact that she's a Quaker was sort of important mm-hmm. to me. We arrived at that. Me and Greta were sitting in her little studio apartment at one point, and we said, you know, I don't remember who said what, but somehow we came up with the idea that she's a Quaker. I always knew she had some religious background. It just seemed perfect that she was a Quaker. And also the way she dresses and things has such an unusual modesty and yet this great sense of color and the idea that she sort of dresses for herself to please herself. She's just an unusual character, but she's also kind of very relatable. She's kind of a girl next door in a way. Then that's a lot of that is down to Greta, I think, because Greta's mm-hmm. just has this wonderful quality of being both unique and very relatable at the same time.
Throughout the movie, I mean, the characters, the acting in it is just superb. I mean, you're talking about Ethan Hawke, Greta Gerwig, Julianne Moore, who's just, I mean, she really almost, I mean, steals the show with her performance. But let's talk about the roles that, you know, in this. There's a lot that goes into the roles that we play. You know, Maggie's character has a lot to do with, like you said, she's got a plan. This is what she's doing. She's a great support, but she's a little bit manipulative in the way that she tries to make everybody do what they're supposed to do. Then there's, you know, Ethan Hawke's character, where he's the novelist who's just looking for someone to love his stuff. It's more complex than that. But then, yeah. And then Julianne Moore, who's already the accomplished writer who isn't giving that back. I mean, there's a lot going on, the dynamics. But
yeah.
But this movie does center around the roles that we play in these relationships.
Right. And also how the roles change depending on who we're with. And you see how Ethan Hawke's character, John, is one person when he's with Georgette, which is more, right. At one point he says every relationship has a gardener and a rose. And the idea is that when he's with Georgette, who's Julianne Moore's character, he's definitely the gardener and she's the rose. And he's sort of sick of being the gardener. So he finds Maggie, who's a gardener. He becomes a rose. Then he's a complete rose, does nothing at all to take care of anything and ends up sort of almost using her. And it's really, what's interesting is it's like, I do think that people, depending on who you're with, you change. And some of finding the right person is liking yourself when you're with a person. Mm-hmm. Like, what does that person bring out in you? And you definitely see how people switch depending. And that's something that's brought up a lot in the movie is that, you know, one woman brings out in John versus another woman. Yeah.
So, I mean, what was it about that story that drew you to writing about relationships in this way? Because that's so accurate when you think about everybody and every relationship. I mean, there's something so personal about that. What was it as a filmmaker that you wanted to explore in that
regard?
Well,
you know, I guess it had been in the air. Some of this was just in the air. I remember having tea with Julianne one afternoon, maybe a year before I got these chapters in the mail. And she said, you know, I have a friend who left her husband and a big cloud of romance for somebody else. 5 years pass, and she's spending all her time organizing people's, you know, school pickups, coordinated vacations.
Yeah, two families. Worth,
two
right,
families,
right.
Blended family. And she said, and she's like, you know, maybe I should have just stayed with my husband because now it's just a big pain in the neck. So I was just, I had that in my mind. Then I read these chapters about blended families, about how complicated it is, about the idea of trying to put, you know, stuff what happened back in the box. As Bill Hader says, you can't just stuff what happened back in the box, because he keeps yelling at Maggie because he's his, you know, her kind of best friend and always tells her the truth. And I think actually his character is basically the audience, like what the audience is often thinking is like, what are you doing now? But anyways, so when I read these, you know, I you know, it kind of echoed that conversation that I'd had with Julianne. And I think like I wanted to find a way of talking about how we live now when the rule book's been thrown out. All the ways that we're supposed to have a family have multiplied by a million. You can have a family in so many different right. ways, so many different possibilities, with or without a partner, or partnerships change. And, you know, who are we now? And what do we mean to each other as men and women? And, you know, in a way, we have so much choice, which is beautiful. And that freedom is beautiful. But it also is kind of weighty. It's kind of light and weighty at the same time.
Rebecca Miller is my guest tonight. She's a filmmaker. Her film Maggie's Plan is out in theaters this week, starring Greta Gerwig, Ethan Hawke, Julianne Moore. Let's continue the conversation after a break here. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest tonight, Rebecca Miller, longtime filmmaker and writer. Her new film, Maggie's Plan, comes out this week. Greta Gerwig, Ethan Hawke, Bill Hader, Maya Rudolph, Julianne Moore, star-studded cast, great film. It's the fifth for Rebecca Miller, who's my guest tonight. We were talking about relationships right before the break. I mean, that really is at the core of this movie. I mean, it really is about how many different variations we can have on the sort of quote-unquote marriage and relationship. There's so much going on around us. It's not like it was in, say, the 50s.
Absolutely. Or even, like, really the 80s, the yeah. 90s. I mean, I think that things are changing constantly in terms of what's acceptable. Of course, people were having unusual family arrangements, but now it's much more acceptable. And I'm finding that women in their late 20s, early 30s really connect with this movie, partly because they identify with that thing of, I can live so many different ways. How do I want to have children? How do I want to live my life? You know, and they're not going to just take it from somebody of how they're going to live their life. They're going to make a decision on their own. So I think in that sense, Maggie's conundrums speak to them.
With Ethan Hawke's character, I mean, it starts the movie with this, you know, as we expect, a setup to an affair. And then, it, you know, it quickly flashes to, you know, what we would think would happen is he left his wife and everything is good. But it's not necessarily the case. I mean, the same problems that were in the first marriage, maybe in the second, maybe it's reversed. There's mundane life gets in the way. When you think about that, I mean, that's what's fun about Maggie's Plan is it's not what you would expect from a movie about, you know, marriage and affairs.
Yeah, in some ways, the end of the movie comes about 20 minutes in, and then everything sort of starts. But again, you know, the idea of a screwball to me is all about not quite knowing what to expect, and yet it's still a romantic comedy, so you still have certain laws that you're respecting. So you both have the law of unpredictability that you're respecting, and then the law of sort of closure and
good feeling. You've had experience in drama and in comedy, but this is a little bit new for you to do the screwball kind of thing. But this could be a drama in the way that it kind of plays out. These are pretty heavy topics.
Absolutely. And it's really just the decision to see it through the lens of the lighter or more comical lens that you absolutely could make a very dramatic movie out of the same subject matter. And that's what's sort of interesting. It's like, because a director's job finally is about finding and maintaining tone. And so once you decide on tone and you commit to it and you get everybody else to come on board with you, what's fascinating is, of course, it has to start with the script, but it's also what's happening on set and how the actors you know, cleave to the same tone, how they all kind of end up like kind of flocking together into the same tone. I mean, I think it started a little bit with me and Greta, that Greta and I were so we were both really tight. We had done a lot of work. We had really knew what we wanted in terms of the character. And I think that made the other actors safe and feel like they knew where they were going with the rest of it.
How important is it as a director to explore or define that tone with the actors before you start?
I mean, I think it's really important.
How do you
but
do that?
Yeah. It's not the kind of thing is like you can't say it in words.
Right.
You don't say what it is. You have to start with the script. The script has to be, it's almost like a notation in music. And that's true for the DP, the cinematographer as well. They have notes, and it's how they play those notes that is the interpretation. It's the same with actors. Words are notes. And we didn't have a lot of improvisation in the in the movie. But to me, all acting is improvisation in that, you know, this is where, you know, how, what kind of emotion do you feel in this moment? And how are you going to, what's the timing? And how, what kind of spin are you going to put on it? And how are you going to make it funny, or how are you going to make it sad? And, you know, and you can, as a director, you're always kind of trying to kind of guide people with as few words as possible. And you know, maybe if people are saying a scene quite slowly and momentously, if they can breeze through something that seems like a serious scene, that might be a better way of doing it. And it might actually land harder or better.
For you, I mean, you've had a career as a writer and, you know, screenwriter and also a director and a filmmaker. I mean, is there a part that you like better than others? I mean, do you, as the writer, you know, are adapting this script and putting this script together, that takes care of the tone kind of part. And here comes the directing, which, you know, making sure that it pops out. Do you like one role better than the other?
In terms of writing screenplays and directing, I think I prefer being on set to writing screenplays. I do love writing novels because, like, there you get to control a whole world, and you, every sentence, you know, has to stand for itself and is hugely important. Screenplays themselves are kind of blueprints, and they're pleasurable. They're the most pleasurable to write once you've cast and you start to kind of tailor the parts to the actors, the individual actors. Then it gets really fun. It's a little weird when you're writing for people that you have in your head, but you know they have to be supplanted by actual people, in which case you just have to throw out the person you had in your head and rethink it, you know? It's a form of rewriting, I guess.
Rebecca Miller is my guest tonight. The film is Maggie's Plan. It comes out this week. It stars Greta Gerwig, Ethan Hawke, Julianne Moore. We'll take a break for the news when we come back. I'd love to talk a little bit about the powerful roles for women in this film. I mean, it's tremendous. Julianne Moore is and Greta Gerwig as well. Both, I was like, these are great characters. And how you get there. I mean, you've been public about women directors and hiring more women for feature films. And I would like to know what's stopping us from having more films like this. We'll talk with Rebecca Miller about that when we return. Stay with us.
Cool.
Welcome back to The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Coffin. My guest, Rebecca Miller, longtime filmmaker and screenwriter, and her new film, Maggie's Plan, is out in theaters this week, starring Greta Gerwig, Ethan Hawke, Julianne Moore. I really loved the movie. I loved New York plays a huge role in it. If you are a fan of New York, you're going to love this. This movie, I loved all the scenic design of this. It's so fun. It's so great to see. It reminds you of a Woody Allen kind of scenescape that we see. But it's also the women in this movie, the characters are so strong. They're so interesting and so powerful. Is that intentional for you to make women characters, female characters that are not the Hollywood trope?
Well, you know, I mean, I think I kind of write what I know in a way, and I know so many complicated women that's not hard for me. It would be much harder for me to write simplified women that were more, you know, one-dimensional. That would be harder. I think that what's always interesting to me, and it goes for male parent characters as well, is to show contradictory elements in a single character. You know, like Georgette, Julianne Moore's character. She seems rather cold. She's described as a monster. You meet her and you think, oh, wow, yeah, this woman is forbidding. You know, then you get to know her, and actually she's quite a complicated person. She's actually a very caring mother.
Yeah.
She really loves her husband.
It almost starts off the first time you see her. It almost feels like it's a stereotype of a cold, you know, mother doesn't care. And as the movie unfolds, you see so much more complexity.
Right. And then at the end, you know, she will show you these shades of coolness, because the truth is that she is a multi-layered person, or, you know, like a prism, which is all personalities have that prism quality that, you know, depending on how they turn the light hits in a certain way in a different spectrum comes out of them. And that would be true of Maggie as well, certainly, that, you know, Maggie has a lot of different contradictory elements. She's so funny and goofy on the one hand, and yet she's got real sadness and hurt in her, you know, that you see little glimmers of, and I think make you love her and make you think, you know, feel more connected to her. And, you know, John too can be a very caring, nurturing person, but can also be extremely selfish and go right down the rabbit hole that every writer has the capacity to get lost in. So I think regarding females, you know, I think that it's, to me, it's just they're human beings. And so to me, it's not that much of a stretch.
Another part of this movie that we haven't talked about is it is following the life of writers. Both Julianne Moore and Ethan Hawke in this movie are writers. And, you know, if you, your life, you grew up, you know, the daughter of Arthur Miller. I mean, how much of understanding the neurosis and the life of a writer plays into Maggie's plan?
Well, I definitely think I put a bit of myself in Ethan in that sense of the you know, the ridiculousness of somebody who gets that absorbed into a work of the imagination, you know, and to the point where they just can't get their way out anymore, see their way out anymore. For sure, the absurdity of writers and creative people is something I know very well, and I definitely have used it in the past, and yeah, it just is no exception.
Well, this is the scene where, you know, where Greta Gerwig, Maggie's, you know, wonders if any of the characters are about her, or, you know, like, it seems like at a certain point, as it goes from I'm enamored with your work to now I think you're writing about me, there's an arc even in, you know, the worship of the writer.
Exactly, yeah, the sense that maybe you're being rather used by him, yes, yeah. Definitely. And that's always the danger with, I don't think that somebody once described writers as cannibals, and I don't think that's true. I think they're more magpies. I think that's a kinder way of looking at them.
All right, we're talking with Rebecca Miller here. You know, one of the things, I mean, one issue in Hollywood, which has been the lack of female directors. There's not many feature-length Hollywood films that are being directed by women. Talk about your relationship with Hollywood and that idea that there aren't as many female directors as there should be.
Well, I think one of the nice things about this film is it brings back some of the best things about when we turn on, you know, TCM. You know, what are we looking for? We're looking for a smart movie that still gives us pleasure. And that's what this is, hopefully. You know, this is a film that gives you that. And a lot of those movies had great female protagonists, actually. So, you know, Katharine Hepburn, for example. These wonderful movies with wonderfully intelligent protagonists. So it's not like a new idea. And I think what we'll discover is that, I hope, is that there's really an audience of people who want to go to the cinema and see that if it's entertaining enough, they want to go to a movie like that. And the more that word gets out there, the more the studios say, oh, wow, there really is room for these kind of movies. People really do want to have a thoughtful but hilarious time at the movies, you know, and feel like they've had a complete feast, both visually and in terms of the way, what, you know, the language and the jokes, but also the ideas, that the ideas are real and complicated like us.
Yeah.
You know, so to me, it's as much that as saying, because I think those are the stories a lot of women are interested in telling and are probably best at perhaps directing. Not that they can't go out and make car chase movies and, you know, in space, that's great. But I personally don't want to make those movies. I want to make movies about human beings. That's what interests me. I'm really interested in character. I think it's, you know, the whole thing about women and minorities in film, it's an employment problem. It's a problem where I think that perhaps if we're seen more as human beings who have strengths and weaknesses, kind of taking the sex out of it, it would probably behoove the studios to have some kind of look at some basic prejudices that they are unconsciously having, perhaps. But I think the more we're seen as human beings with strengths of our own, specific strengths that don't only belong to our sex, I think the better we'll be.
Yeah, it's hard for, you know, I'm not in that industry. It's hard to read those and have a hard misunderstanding of why there aren't. I mean, I don't understand when I think about movies. And we had someone in here not too long ago was talking about that Hollywood just doesn't do movies that are $25, $30 million anymore. The only thing they're really interested in is $100 million plus, and that usually is car chase type, you know, superhero type
movies. Right.
The
mid-range film, which was, you know, movies like Kramer versus Kramer or Terms of Endearment, a lot of the movies that you look back and you think, oh, those were wonderful movies. Those were the mid-range movies that were made for a good price, but they were still, you know, they were more modest than the huge tentpole movies, but they were a good size movie. I think that I'd like to bring that back myself, along with some other people who
is that possible to do? I mean, is the industry looking for that?
It's about the market And, you know, the more people that go to this movie, quite frankly, if they see a movie like this succeeding, yeah. then I think that they'll be like, oh, yeah, this is something that we'd like to invest in more. And I think that that's how it goes. It's supply and demand, I think.
Is there a possibility in your career, you see this happening with a lot of successful filmmakers who just say, you know what, I don't need Hollywood. We can make movies and we can go straight to our audience. We can use, you know, crowdfunding, whatever it is. But we're not necessarily at the whim of hoping that someone picks up.
Well, I personally you do need distribution of some kind. But I am an independent filmmaker. I'll probably keep making films independently. But that doesn't mean for nothing. I just mean that the problem for me is that I love to have artistic control. And that's been part of how I've been able to make the films that I make and also draw the actors, because the actors like to know that the buck stops with me. That I'm going to be the person cutting the film, that not some stranger is going to come over and take it over. And yeah. that's a contract that, you know, you can't underestimate the power of that. So I'd say, yeah, I still want to work with studios. I'm very blessed that Sony Classics is putting this out. You know, they're a great, great distribution company. But yeah, it's a bit of a tightrope in terms of like how to preserve your autonomy, but at the same time make the movie you want to make.
Rebecca Miller, filmmaker, the new film Maggie's Plan is in theaters this week. It stars Greta Gerwig, Ethan Hawke, Julianne Moore. Rebecca, thanks so much for being my guest tonight.
Thank you so much.
It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Thanks to Rebecca Miller for being here. Maggie's Plan in theaters this week. I love it that the texters right away like, isn't she married to Daniel Day-Lewis or Ray Fiennes? I struggle with it. You know, she has a tremendous background. We both know that. I mean, she's you know, had her own independent films and her own career. She also is the daughter of Arthur Miller, mm-hmm. Death of a Salesman. And she's married to Daniel Day-Lewis. But, you know, I struggled a little bit because it's really, I wanted to do an interview with her about the merits of that movie.
Yeah.
And her career. And I, you know, I feel bad in the end that I didn't really delve into asking her about her husband.
There's really no point to it.
Right. But that's kind of, I mean, what's it like?
Well, I have this weird thing where it started with Diane Sawyer and like her relationship with Mike Nichols. Mm-hmm. I always thought that was weird, like interesting, like what do they talk about when they're in bed together?
Right.
You know, they're talking about films, news. What's their pillow talk like at the end of the evening?
I'm sure it has everything to do with like who sucks in their building.
It probably does.
They're just in New York, building in Manhattan. Things, they're like, yeah, did you see what the Johnsons are doing in 310? Throw away your garbage. That's probably what it was.
But you know, you asked. In relation to the interview, you asked her about, you know, coming from a family. So you mentioned Arthur Miller. I think that makes sense.
Okay.
But, you know, just to talk about, like,
I know, I just,
like, you don't want to go Chris Farley.
So yeah. Tell me about Daniel Day-Lewis. Yeah.
It's a good movie. I saw the movie and, you know, Greta Gerwig is fantastic.
Yeah, she's delightful.
She really is. You know, I have not seen a lot that she's been in. And it's funny because when I saw it, I'm like, what a precocious character. I was mm-hmm. like, this is really great. And then when I read some of the reviews afterwards, they said that that it reminded them of recent performances she's done in other movies.
Mm-hmm.
So that's like kind of her go-to, this sort of like nerdy kind of.
Yeah.
You know. But I really liked it, so I recommend it. I'm not a, you know, it's so weird because to be able to do this, they let you go and see the movie ahead of time. Like you go to the screeners, do the whole thing like a Richard Roper kind of thing. God, this is not my thing, man. Like I go in there and I come out and I don't know if it's a good movie or not. I'm not a movie critic. I don't know. Like I don't know, man. One of my favorite movies of all time is Friday. You know, like I just, it's not like I'm just kind of like, huh, I like it. I like it in the moment. I'm like, oh, so good. And there's been so many times where I've been seeing movies before they're actually out that I'm like, oh, this movie's so good. It's so good. And then the reviews come out. They're like, this is a terrible movie. And I'm like, why am I so off on this stuff? I'm also, for the record, a terrible food orderer.
what do you mean?
I am the worst. I get very adventurous. I'm like, I have a great story. I got to remember this because I was a kid. But I had ordered I forgot what it was. I was at the Baker Square in Lincoln Park.
Oh, yeah.
And I was there with a friend, and it was college time, and I ordered, like, the Dolphin Safe tuna sandwich, right? At a pizza shop or something. And it wasn't any good. And I was like, and they're like, did you not eat your sandwich? I'm like, yeah, it wasn't very good. And they're like, well, you know, you're kind of the ass who ordered the Dolphin Safe tuna sandwich. I'm like, yeah. And they're like, you know what? We'll give you a free piece of pie. Baker Square is like, you can have a free piece of pie. And I'm like, open the, I never forgot what it was. I'm like, what's the story on this butterscotch custard? And then the waiter just like, just shakes his head.
Just get like, chocolate.
Dude, come on. Get an apple pie. What's the matter with you? So, yes. So I'm I'm adventurous in that regard. And it usually
backfires.
But in this case, I mean, when I go see a movie, when any movie, I have two worlds. One, like with the ones that you go on a Saturday and it's packed, a lot of the environment will affect.
Sure, yeah, that makes
yeah,
a
like
difference.
I'm just like, I had to pick the seat next to me. You know, this Coke costs $7. Like, that all plays into commercials beforehand. But when I'm watching it with the screeners, I mean, they just show the movie.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm always like halfway through by myself. I don't have anyone to talk to about it afterwards. I'm like, this is the greatest movie I've ever seen in my life. Each time, like three or four times now, each time I'm like, this is amazing. I really love this movie. God, I can't believe they did this movie. Oh, gosh, she's so good. And I walk out, I'm like 5 stars. And I'm like, who am I? I don't know.
Well, you see movies.
I barely see movies, Pete.
But I mean, you saw that you went to see this one. I mean, why?
It's good. I like it.
You have an opinion just else. I mean,
I do have an opinion just like everybody else. But I also know that my opinion on the radio, I'm going to say to people, oh, I love Maggie's Plan. Go see it. But I guess I'm really doing is putting an asterisk by it that says Justin Kaufman, who doesn't know what the heck he's talking about.
Well, I think
it's still getting good reviews and it's a good movie. But it's like when we did the Sally Field movie with
Michael Showalter,
yeah. Which was great. Same thing. I walked out of that. I'm like, God, oh, this is a great movie. Like I don't know. Like I have a soft spot in my heart for sort of indie romantic comedies. Like, I really like that.
Yeah. I don't see any of the big blockbusters or the superhero movies. I like kind of what she talked about, mid-range character
you
stories.
Movie,
that's
yeah.
what I like to go see. So, and I think if people are listening to this interview, they're hearing her talk about it, but they only like action movies. They may, you know, I'll probably take a pass. It doesn't sound like it's my thing, or I'll check it out on when it's on Netflix or something like that. But...
And every time I see one of those movies, I'm like, man, I wish I lived in Brooklyn.
Yeah, it really makes me want to, when you talked about how like it looks like a Woody Allen movie nice.
Yeah, it's just beautiful New York. Yeah. Everything about it, you're like,
They don't show any of the garbage in the streets or anything?
No, they always seem to skip that part. Or someone who just likes to yell. That's what I love about New York. What are you yelling about? Why do you have to shout? It's dark out. Stop shouting. I love New York. I love New Yorkers, but I'm just like, wow, man, that's the part that when people say that they might be a little bit around, you know, rough around the edges. That's the part I never understand. Hey, man! Hey, how's it going, buddy? Shut up! Right? And then the guy whips open the window. Shut up! You shut up! That's no good. Right? But it is. It's a really good movie.
Yeah, I'm going to check it out this weekend, I think.
Yeah, let me know what you think. Maya Rudolph and Bill Hader are great. Bill Hader's in it. God, what a great character actor.
I was watching, you know, we were watching Saturday Night Live like we always do on Sunday morning, usually.
Yeah.
And then...
you're like a 12-year-old who can't stay up.
I really can't. We go out during the day, you know, and have dinner, and, you know, by 9 o'clock, you know, it's... But so they... Jason Sudeikis was on, and, you know, he's like a movie star. He's just, like, so good.
So confident.
And I don't see – I like most of the cast, but I don't see that those star – like, I don't see any stars in the current cast.
Well, you wonder if someone like Pete Davidson's going to lose that kind of, well, I'm hanging around kind of character, and he'll become Jimmy Fallon.
Yeah, yeah.
But you just wonder, because even with Jimmy Fallon, you're like, there's no way this guy's... And look, I mean, he has matured into
that's true.
One of the biggest entertainers of in America right now. So maybe there is something to, like, it's just they need to mature. But it always felt to me like Jason had the potential.
Yeah, and Bill Hader. Bill
Hader is so good. Yeah. I have a great story, Bill. It's not a great story at all. It's a terrible story. But the I was in L.A. for something, and this is great because we're in Chicago, and I can tell it real quick. Actually, maybe I'll wait until after the break.
All right.
Because I want to – it's really not that great. Now I screwed it up. Because who cares? It's not that great. I know, but it's not that great of a story. So I'm like, you know what? Get the news headlines. Go ahead and get yourself some popcorn. We're going to come back at 9:06. I'm going to tell my Bill Hader story.
Yeah. We'll make something up.
No, I got to make it up. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up, Barbara Gaines is going to be here, Artistic Director of Chicago Shakespeare Theater. I'm very excited to talk to her about Tug of War. It's Shakespeare 400. It's the year-long, I don't want to say celebration because that seems to be the wrong word, but the year-long commemoration? No. Memorial? I mean, it's 400 years since Shakespeare died.
Yeah.
So you don't say celebrate. I guess you could say celebration of his
life.
They're
celebrating.
Yeah, but it just seems a little morbid. Anyway, it was 400 years ago, so.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know him. We're going to talk about Tug of War, a 6-hour play that is being put on, a musical. I don't think it's a musical, but it's a musical play. There's music. But they're really kind of going at it. It's an interesting concept of going at it almost like we binge watch House of Cards or, you know, Orange is the New Black, or in my case, River Monsters. And that they're sort of applying that concept to plays. So it's 6 hours, but there's a bunch of breaks. There's a meal break where you can, you know, they're pre-ordered meals. So there's a lot going on because if you're at Chicago Shakes down in Navy Pier, there's a lot you can do there, you know, to walk outside, do all that kind of thing. So it's kind of interesting, but it's really sort of looking at how war played a huge role and was a huge character in some of Shakespeare's history plays. So we'll talk with Barbara Gaines coming up here in the 9 o'clock hour. And coming up at 10 o'clock, Picnic. That's right, we're picking nicknames for the 2016 Chicago Cubs. Big, they got out to a big lead today against St. Louis. They maintaining that lead?
As far as I could tell. We have a lot of TVs here that are small,
so you don't know. It's just
and they
smushed.
Don't fit in the little TV. That's why right now I just see a batter batting, and then in the bottom right hand corner I just see Chicago and St. Louis, but I have no idea what numbers they are. But I think Rob said they were up 12-1. So,
They're up. They're up big, 12-1. Yeah, wow. There you go. Big win.
Back. They're back.
So tonight, we're picking two Chicago Cubs to give nicknames to. Pedro Strop, mm-hmm. who is the setup man. Would you consider him to be the setup man, the holds guy?
I would consider him to be that, yeah.
Okay, so he's a big part of the bullpen for the Chicago Cubs. So also, he's got, you know, we'll get all the information from Joel Reese, who will be here. He works for BP Prospectus Wrigleyville. So he covers the Cubs.
Yeah.
We'll talk. He'll give us sort of what we need to know about Pedro Strop. Because all I know is his hat is cocked a little bit to the right.
He's also the player that when somebody hits a walk-off home run, he runs alongside them. You ever see that?
No.
Like somebody hits like a walk-off, like Chris Bryant, say hits a walk-off home run, and everybody gathers at the plate.
I thought you meant the other team. Like he gave it up, and he's like, then he's taunting him around the bases.
No.
I'm like, that's never turned into a fight.
No, like Chris Bryant hits one, and then as he's rounding third, like Pedro Strop kind of runs along with the person that hits the has hit the home run.
That's funny,
or a walk off hit,
right,
whatever.
Yeah. But so we'll talk. We'll talk with Joel Reese. He'll be here, but it's about you, and we've got stuff to give away. 312-981-7200. We'll give away prizes for the best nicknames for Pedro Strop. And I didn't even mention the other guy, Addison Russell. Shortstop, star. He's going to be a star for the Cubs. He continues to be a clutch hitter and a great defensive shortstop. So Addison Russell and Pedro Strop are our Cubs tonight that are featured on Picnic. We got to get them nicknames. The goal is that the whole 2016 2016 team will have nicknames by the end of the summer. And so it's legitimate. You know, it can't be like, oh, coach gave him a cool nickname and then we're just supposed to eat it. You know, like,
yeah,
oh,
no. These are new.
These are crowdsourced,
yep.
Authentic, legitimate. Dexter Fowler, free range.
Yep.
Justin Grimm, Grim Reaper, but you got to do Grim Reaper colon. It's harvest season. who else did we do? We did Javi Baez, babyface.
Yep.
We did Kyle Hendricks, which is the calculator.
Yep.
And then last week we did, what do you got?
Tommy La Stella.
Tommy Gunn. And then the star last week was
Hector Rondon.
Right. What did we come up with on Rondon?
Hectoro.
These are great.
But the thing is, you can't just set it and forget it. You have to start using them every
right.
time it comes up.
Hectoro's on the mound, right?
We got a text last week saying, yeah. you know, Tommy Gunn hit a double.
Right.
You know,
you got to use it. That's the whole point. We're giving Chicago some utility.
Uh-huh.
This is an opportunity for you to be on the inside.
I'm going to the game on Sunday, so I'm going to be infiltrating from inside Wrigley Field, getting those names out.
Are you
going to
bring a big bull? Like, you bring a big bull, you know, placard
sign? Yeah.
Sign? Hectoro! And
everyone's I'm working on it.
And then everyone will love it.
Getting on TV.
My Bill Hader story, so because someone just reminded me. Bill Hader was on his first season of SNL, and he was in L.A., and we were in L.A. Schadenfreude was in L.A., the comedy group that I worked with. And we were – it was like you would do like a workshop or it was like a showcase show. And so one of the guys that I'd known for a while or maybe didn't, I can't remember, he was really adamant about the night before when we were at the show. He was at the bar and he was like – we had a great show. And he kept saying – the guys from Broken Lizard were there. Mm-hmm. Like, it was a great show. It was an awesome memory to be, like, all these comedy people in one room. And this one guy's like, I manage a nightclub on Melrose. And I want you guys to come over tomorrow night. Be my guest. VIP, table service, the whole bit. Bottle service. I'm like, whoa. This is L.A. I'm primetime. Maybe Nelly will be there. You know what I mean? I'm like, this is it. This is probably 2005, 2006.
Yeah,
so I'm just like, oh, yeah. So, you know, the part of me is like, that was the takeaway from that party. The party, you know, like, tomorrow we got to go to this club. And some of the other guys in Schadenfreude were like, I'm meeting my cousin for dinner. I'm like, no, you're not.
No.
We're going to be ballers. Come on, man. We got this opportunity.
My cousin.
Right. Yeah. Oh, I said I'd meet my old roommate. We're going to go get some tacos. What's the matter with you? Tell them no. We're going to do that during the day. We got plans. So anyway, I think I dragged. Who did I drag that night? It might have been Adam, maybe Steve. Anyway, all I remember is like we're going. We get a cab. It's on the course on the other. It's L.A. Everything is an hour away, half hour away. We get over there. We're like, all right. We walk into this club. There is nobody in there. Like, not a person. Like, I'm like, is it just, are we early? Because it was like after 10 o'clock. And we're like, are we early?
Yeah, you didn't go at 6.
And he was like, the guy's like, oh my God, you guys showed up. Oh, this is great. Yeah, let's sit over here. What do you got? Can I get you guys something to drink? You know, like two for ones tonight. And I'm like, no, wait, that's not how this was sold to me.
Two for one.
What's going on here? So anyway, there's nobody there. And like, he's like, it's going to pack up, right? And then, another comic showed up, a couple people trickled in, but it really wasn't like it was like six
wasn't
people.
It what you were expecting.
And so I'm standing by the bar and there's a guy standing next to me and I'm like, and so someone was watching TVs, there might've been a basketball game on or something. And I'm like, and, the manager came over and talked to him. And then I'm like, so man, nobody's here. He's like, yeah, nobody's here. And I'm like, yeah. So, what do you do? You're a comic. And he's like, yeah, I'm on Saturday Night Live. And I didn't know because it was his first year and he was a player and it was early in the season, so I had maybe missed
often.
The first three, like he just done the Vincent Price bit. And I'm like, no, really? He's like, yeah, Bill Hader, I'm a new cast member, a featured player. I'm like, you got sucked into this too? He's like, yeah, I thought it was going to be... more.
I'm like, we're both like
a bottle service.
We all thought, and the best part about that story, and I you know, I feel bad, because I really love the guy who brought us over there, and he was a cool dude. But what he did is he felt so bad He's like, because he knew we were in from Chicago and the whole bit, that he was like, all right, you know what I'm going to do? Let's hop here. Come on out. So we walked outside. He's like, I'll drive you guys to a club that's hopping, and I'll get you guys in. That's the least I could do. So we go to another bar. He drives us in his, like, you know, Honda Accord. Manager from the other nightclub, yeah. And he shows up. He's like, these guys cool? And they're like, yeah, cool. And then we're just at some random club, and we're like, why are we here? And that was it.
Were the other people mad that you drugged them? Well, they could have been eating tacos with relatives.
Probably. They probably told me, but I probably spun it like, that was pretty cool, huh, hanging out with Saturday Night Live. I knew it. You know, I knew Saturday Night Live would be there, man. It's pretty cool. It's so cool. It's so exclusive that it was just us and Saturday Night Live. Pretty cool. How dare I stumble on a Hall of Famer's name? Dean Richards hitting the WGN Walk of Fame this Friday. You're invited to join us at the WGN Walk of Fame, the Radio Walk of Fame. This year we'll recognize honorees in an induction ceremony on Friday, May 27th at 10 a.m. outside the Trib Tower right here at Pioneer Court. You can bring a chair. I like this. Bring a chair.
Yeah.
Because if you don't bring a chair, you're going to stand.
Right.
And because all the prime spots to lean against are taken probably because of this construction. So you only got a couple of lean spots, so the rest you'd be standing. So.
Yeah, because we were standing last year, and I could have used a chair.
Right.
Yeah.
And all week, we were reading the copy, bring a chair. And we're like, no, man, we don't need no chair.
It was hot.
We're the download. It was hot. I remember that.
Yeah.
I'm excited for this. This is always cool. It's like, it's amazing. I remember last year, it was our first, we were just here for like less than a couple weeks,
yeah.
Right? And I remember just the skyline behind the stage and all the great people that were on stage and all the great stories about WGN. It's pretty cool. I mean, if you're in the area and you can sneak out to see it, it's just great. It's always fun to be able to see people in this sort of pageantry.
Yeah.
It is pageantry. It's cool. I like it. Commemorating Max Armstrong, Floyd Brown, Dan Fabian, Marilyn Miller, Tom Peterson, Dean Richards.
Well deserved.
He should just be on the Walk of Fame just for getting mad at Kelly Rowland the other week.
Okay, because you want to talk. She wanted to talk about.
I'm here to talk about soap. He's like, all right. I'm here to talk about contacts. Like saline solution? He's like, no. See, I'm excited for Dean. He's a great guy, and it's fun to have a ceremony like this that we can talk about. And it's cool that there's, you know, to be a part of an organization like WGN where there is a Walk of Fame.
Mm-hmm.
There is. I mean, if you walk, there's people standing out right now. You can see right around the corner. If you guys look right around the corner, there's all these great stones, and those are people from WGN history that are in the Walk of Fame. Kathy and Judy are down there. Spike Odell.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, everybody, you know, the Wally Phillips and the Bob Collins of the world. People who made radio history here in Chicago, in this building.
Impressive.
It is impressive, and it doesn't go unnoticed for us. I mean, I really am honored to sit in the same chair and broadcast on the same frequency as people like Milt Rosenberg and you know, Bob Collins and Wally Phillips and Kathy and Judy. It's great.
It's humbling.
And now Dean Richards. I'm going to be on Dean's show this weekend.
Really?
Yeah, because I'm emceeing Bike to Drive.
I know.
And so there's live hits in that where you go, let's go out to Bike to Drive and talk to Justin. And then I'm going to have to fake, like, I'm on a bike. I'm riding.
You're not riding?
I'm not saying that I'm not. I'm just saying that I have other responsibilities, Pete. I'm the MC.
Yeah,
don't expect. You never see the MC of the marathon to be like, all right, I got to catch up. No.
Adamley would.
No, he would. No. Well, maybe Adamley would. But, I have roles and responsibilities. I need to, make sure everybody's hydrated.
Yeah, you do.
Did everyone get a banana? That's my job. And then there's a lot of other things going on there. That's going
to
be great.
Where are you basing yourself out of? Because I have to. We're going to be. I'm going to ride my bike in it. Yeah, but I want to make sure I see you. I'm seeing. I don't know. Downtown somewhere?
Yeah, downtown. Like, that's where the big...
Somewhere
like
on Lakeshore Drive,
I think it's
take
like
it.
Grant Park. Huh. I think. I need to check the itinerary. It's Montrose Beach. Where are you? God darn it.
That's going to be fun.
Yeah, I'm excited. It's early.
Yeah, that's not
That's what Claire
fun.
Said. Claire's like, you want to get there early. Claire McDermott, who was on the show last week.
Yeah,
because
the birds are chirping and the waves are waving.
Right. That's when you really want to hit it. I'm like I said, I'm excited to be a part of this because Bike the Drive is so, I just really think it's like the big brother to the Naked Bike Ride. You know, the Naked Bike Ride, that's that, you know, that's just gimmicks. Bike the Drive, that's real deal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so big, they have a little icon. Well, when WGN News, when Tom Skilling or whoever does the news on WGN,
they have
the little MB Mike the Drive logo on Sunday.
There you go.
And that's how big it is.
I'm going to need some support from you, Download Nation, sometime tonight. Just any sort of bike-related jokes, any sort of, you know, anecdotes, even if it was your life, I'm going to have to co-opt that. You know, if you're a biker and you're like, I rode like 2,500 miles, then that's really my story. So we're going to have to figure that part out. Because I'm not sure my stories of biking are worth it at the EMC. Like, I had a bike and then someone stole it off my back porch. I had a bike and I used to ride it when I would go to Transitions Book Place. And I was at the personal growth bookstore when I was working the coffee shop there. I had a bike. You know,
you have to massage those a little bit,
yeah,
I think.
Right. I don't know. I mean, so I'm going to have to work on some better stories. I just don't have them.
So are you going to be talking the whole time?
No, I'm only in. I think Andre's in. Andre Darlis is in.
Oh, wonderful.
And I'm in. And there's a couple other sort of featured speakers.
Great.
But so I think that I'm, I think it's 9:30.
Nice.
Like, I think I got a 2-hour chunk. I am talking most of the time.
All right. Well, yeah, I will zoom by you in my bike wear.
You
know,
I don't
want
to see that.
One time I was going up the side of L'Alpe d'Huez in stage 7.
Right.
You know, and I get to the top, and then it was all downhill from there.
That's what I need.
Like 60 miles per hour, man.
That's what I'm going to need from you, Rob. We're going to have to, tomorrow night, Friday night, you're going to teach me some French. So I can, act as if I not only know the Tour de France, but maybe I was on a team. Like, maybe I wasn't a rider, but maybe I was one of the guys that replaced Lance Armstrong's blood. You know what I mean?
You're in the sag wagon, yeah.
I could be the guy, like, we're about to do an infusion, Mr. Armstrong.
With his super high oxygenated blood.
That could be my job. All right, coming up, Barbara Gaines is going to be here. We're going to talk Tug of War, Chicago Shakespeare Theater. I'm excited to talk with Barbara about this huge undertaking and the shows that are happening for Shakespeare 400 here in Chicago. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up at 10 o'clock, Picnic. Joel Reese is going to be here. We're going to select, we're going to give nicknames to two of the star Chicago Cubs. This is something we've been doing all month, where the 2016 Chicago Cubs are getting nicknames, authentic, legitimate nicknames from WGN listeners, so that as we hurl towards destiny, we will have the rights. Names to call our players in October. So coming up tonight, Pedro Strop, who's the setup reliever for the Cubs, and also Addison Russell, who's the star shortstop. So those are the two that we're going to be giving nicknames to. Already great nicknames coming in. 312-981-7200. That's coming up in the 10 o'clock hour. But right now, if you're a Shakespeare fan, or just a theater fan, what Chicago Shakespeare Theater is doing this year is must-see. In honor of the 400th anniversary of Shakespeare's death, Shakespeare 400, they're putting up a huge spectacle show called Tug of War. It's a two-part play, and the first is on stage now. It's called Foreign Fire. It's a who's who of Shakespeare actors and collaborators presenting over 100 characters, all with live music on stage, and the theme is war. It's being billed as binge-watch Theater. And it's the brainchild of artistic director Barbara Gaines. And she joins me now. Barbara Gaines, welcome back to The Download.
Hello.
Good to see you.
It's good
Congrats
to see you.
On the play. This is great. Getting great reviews.
Yeah, we're doing great. I mean, it's Shakespeare being Shakespeare. It's fun. So people are having a hell of a lot of fun. Also, we've got a brilliant rock band on stage that play all the way through these plays, and they become part of the action.
Okay, I have to start with why this treatment? Because for Shakespeare 400, it's already sort of Shakespeare all year long. You could easily have gone with classics, pull out all the stops to do different productions. Why do this ambitious project?
Well, you know, I just don't know. The answer is that I get my ideas, and I don't know where they come from, but they're just like shot through me, and I don't question them if it feels right. And this one felt right because, look, we're in the longest war in American history, and the interesting thing is that when I've seen many marathon Shakespeare plays for the histories, and they've been fantastic. You know, they've been really great stuff. But they have never, ever explored the history plays from the eyes of an ordinary soldier. And we are now doing all these history plays with a totally different perspective. What happens to the guys on the front lines when these kings and queens or presidents or prime ministers or, you know, metaphorically, you can go down the line of leaders. What happens? What is the cost or the real cost of war? And there's a lot of beauty in it, you know, the bonding of the band of brothers.
Mm-hmm.
We few, we happy few, we band of brothers. There's an awful lot of humor in this because it's Shakespeare and he's funny. But there's also a different way of looking at our own lives. And I'm taking these plays, and instead of looking them through the kings and queens, I'm going 100,000 feet up in the air, and what I'm seeing is the whole cycle of history of wars in the world and why mankind seems to make the same mistakes
over and over.
I
mean, it's interesting because, you know, war plays a role. A big role in the history plays of Shakespeare. I mean, the three that you're working off of here, Edward III, Henry V, and Henry VI, Part One, right?
Right.
But the concept being that the history plays that Shakespeare wrote, and even some of the other stuff. I mean, war is always in his work.
Yeah, it is, because war is always in our lives. Name a decade when the world hasn't been at war in some way or another. And, you know, I've come to have enormous respect, always have had, for soldiers and people who give their lives for a greater purpose, you know, their country, their love of democracy, their love of their country. But there's also, you know, people take advantage of that.
Yeah.
And I do believe that there would be far less war, if we brought back the draft. What do you say? Let's bring it back.
There we go. This segment took a nasty turn.
It really, some of the joy about all of this, quite frankly, is that the audience is having such a fun ride. It moves super fast. And, okay, the music. The music came to me literally in one weekend. It just poured. Don't know from where, but we have, for instance, we have some of Tim Buckley's songs. We have Pink. We have, we will have in the next, Pete Townsend. We have a little Mahler, a little Bach. We have a lot of Richie Havens. We have Frank Lesser. We have all of these songs that have something to do with either being a soldier or war in some way or another, or love and lust. That's a big part of it.
Well, I mean, a lot of the plays, you know, are surrounding, you know, this one is called Foreign Fire, the concept of foreign wars. This was, in Shakespeare's time, it was the English and the French. But there was a lot that had to go into the kings and the queens and why they were fighting.
That's a good
power,
point.
Ambition, greed, like all the things that one powerful person can make so much damage and destruction.
That's exactly right. And nothing has changed. There's the truth of it. People go to war. You see from the three different, we really meet six different kings, French, English, and all these three plays. And most of them are incredibly, I mean, this is Shakespeare, all these hundreds of years ago. Some of them are, you know, are enraged about a failed love affair. Mm-hmm. So they can't, they hate. They're angry. They've been humiliated. So he goes to war. He sees how many people he can kill. He'll show her. Mm-hmm. You know, other times they just, they want fame. Other times it's all about power. Sometimes, you know, it's interesting. Shakespeare, I can only talk about him. There are kind of no good wars in Shakespeare. It's just a lot of squabbling and a lot of people behaving very badly, mm-hmm. regularly. And but there's also a lot of sexuality, too. You know, it is... I guess the best way to explain these wonderful plays is that you have people who are so intuitively passionate, and whether it's about war or themselves or whatever agenda they have, they cannot control their behavior.
Yeah.
And that's dangerous because as an adult, we have to.
Right. You know, I'm interested. I mean, you kind of in the program call this out, just the idea that Shakespeare... You know, in his time, he's not writing specifically about something that's happening right then because it's dangerous. I mean, his words are very pointed. He would mm-hmm. be, you
he
know,
been assassinated.
He'd been assassinated. Yep. But he writes in a very particular way about history. And in doing so, kind of got away with sort of pointing out some of the foibles and the things of the kings and queens.
That's
of their
right. And you know why? Is that Shakespeare, in all of his characters and all of the plays, he never judged any one of his characters. He just showed them as they were. So he lets you decide mm-hmm. whether you like Richard III or Edward III. And so he's not being judgmental. He's treating the audience like they were adults and they can make up their own minds. That's very unusual. He's not teaching. He's not proselytizing. He's just saying, take a look at what happened. And you know what? In all honesty, if he hadn't written these plays that would take place hundreds of years before his life, he would have been in jail or killed
right.
because he created revolutions.
We're talking with Barbara Gaines, the artistic director of Chicago Shakespeare Theater. Shakespeare 400 is on right now. Her show Tug of War, Foreign Fire is on stage at Chicago Shakespeare. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. I want to talk about the production, about this concept of binge-watching theater,
okay.
sort of taking what we know from Netflix and some of the other things and applying it to the stage. Barbara
Super.
Gaines in studio. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN Radio. Barbara Gaines, my guest. She's the artistic director of Chicago Shakespeare Theater. She's also the woman behind Tug of War. Part one is out, Foreign Fire. It's on stage now. This is really an amazing undertaking. 6 hours, a lot of breaks, live music on stage.
Yep.
I mean, we talked about the band, and you kind of sort of threw out the contemporary kind of mix that this is.
Right.
But, you know, we forget that Shakespeare is very musical in the way that, you know, everything that, even the prose, everything about it is musical. So it's not that far-fetched to have, you know, music intertwined.
No. You know what? You're so wise. Even his prose, not to mention his verse, it's all music.
Right.
And so, and here the music is actually, now Shakespeare purists are not going to like this, but the music is literally intertwined like a tapestry in the scenes. So they're not just punctuation at the end of a scene or the beginning of a scene.
They're
These
in
are
there.
The characters.
Why
actually,
aren't they going to like it?
Oh, man. Well, I don't know. I mean, if you like purity.
But I guess that's, I mean, I the reason I kind of throw that
yeah.
out is, I mean, there is a lot of sort of that kind of tug of war.
Yes.
Between sort of purists and adaptations of Shakespeare. This is essentially a thematic adaptation in a way.
It is.
So how do you sort of reconcile the purists who say don't touch Shakespeare that way?
Well, you know what? I say to them, then go to another theater. And with all my respect and really and fondness, I can only, all artists can do is use what's in their soul. You only have that to go to. And luckily, I have a friend in Shakespeare, and he creates in me images. And suddenly I see common, wonderfully ordinary soldiers like I would be if I were not an artist. And I see them getting ready to go off to war, and I can see them, and I hear them sing a song by Tim Buckley. Once I was a soldier who fought on foreign sands for you. Once I was a hunter who brought home fresh meat for you. Soon there'll be another to tell you I was just a lie. Sometimes I wonder, I really wonder, if you'll remember me. Now, with that song inside of me and these history plays in front of me, that song just inspired, you know, to go to so many other places. And we got one of the Pink songs, which is, you know, what is it, the na-na-na-na-na. We're going to start a fight.
Yeah, right.
that's it. I'm having more fun.
Right. Well, I've always, you know, with Shakespeare for me and for the limited experiences I've had with it, both as an actor, as a reader, the one thing that I've always found challenging is that, you know, it really takes a while for you to understand not just the text, but the subtext, like everything about it. It's a very difficult proposition to really understand Shakespeare. So it makes a lot of sense for you you've dedicated your life to Shakespeare to be able to have that kind of that balance between the images of what, you know, you're seeing with the history plays and the music.
That's right.
You know, because you've lived it.
No, I've lived it. And also, but you know, I have to tell you something. I just mentioned this earlier today. Teenagers are loving this. They are like, their eyes and their mouths are wide open and they are leaning forward and they are like, they are just so into it because the stories are very clearly told and very, in some ways, simple. The emotions are complex, but children understand the complexity of emotion because, of course, we're all complicated, right?
Right.
Whether you're 8 years old or 80, life is complicated.
It really is. All right, so let's talk about this binge-watching concept.
Yeah.
So we get the idea of binge-watching now. It's a concept that everybody knows that we sit down in front of a television, we watch 15 episodes of our favorite show. How does that work when you're talking about theater?
Well, it works in a really good way because you get to know the characters. Like, this is really fun because what you're watching, Edward III, is he's the great-grandfather or great-great-grandfather of Richard III, which is the last play in the six-play thing. So you get to know Edward III, and then you get to know his grandson, Henry V, and then you get to know Henry V's son, Henry VI, and suddenly you're in the middle of Thanksgiving dinner, and everybody's yelling at everybody else, and it's just like your dysfunctional family. I mean, it literally becomes like you know them so well, you want to spend more time with them as long as you don't have to take them home. I mean, it is it's fascinating, and I guess it's kind of hypnotic. That's what people are saying. That they, you know, I'm getting complaints. Now, this has been shocking. I thought we would get complaints about time.
Right,
and
6 hours.
And people are now,
right.
The plays are really 4 hours and 50 minutes.
And then you have intermissions.
Then you have a few intermissions.
Things like that, yeah.
But people are saying, not only the time has gone so fast, but that we were shocked that it was over so quickly.
That's a good thing.
That's a really nice thing to hear, and I'm hearing it all over the place. So binge watching, I think it's like I love soap operas, and that's what Shakespeare is really. It's just like this big soap opera. I was really into soap operas when I was an actress because when you weren't working, you were home watching TV.
Right. Well, I mean, there has been this success. It's becoming more commonplace to have plays that are much longer. We've been seeing this just in pop culture and in theater and Broadway in the last decade, where more and more theaters are engaging in this sort of marathon type theater. Do you like for you as a director?
Well,
I mean, is it double the work or is it a different kind of?
No, it's triple the work.
It's triple the work. So talk about the process.
It's triple doing the work, but you know, it's funny. We knew that that Shakespeare 400, the 400th anniversary of his death, we knew we wanted to do something that was really an anchor for Shakespeare. And in all honesty, when I thought of it, I know it must be like this with you and all of your listeners. When you have something you love in front of you, and you know and you hope and pray that you can, A, entertain. You just want everybody to have a blast, right? But I also want, with all my heart, to shift perspectives about war for you to have really empathy for both sides, the warmongers and the soldiers, for us to see things in a more complex way with the prayer that maybe we can shift enough perspectives to stop this massive, horrible engine of war throughout the world. I know every artist is crazy, and I feel a little demented saying this in public, so forgive me, all of you listeners, but you know what? Art can change the world, and that's what we pray for.
I would hope there are more demented things in the world than that. You know, I hope that's the least demented we have to. But for you, doing Foreign Fire, coming up in the fall, you'll do Civil Strife. Just from the experience of rehearsals and putting together Foreign Fire, what have you learned that you're going to bring to the second part that's coming up in the fall?
That's a very good point. Number one, I'm going to make it, it's, first of all, you stay with the set. These are three different plays in Foreign Fire, right? Totally different mm-hmm. plays. But part two and part three of Henry VI and Richard III are contiguous action. So you stay with the same characters three plays. So you get to know them so much better. You get to see the young Richard III before he becomes a mass murderer. You get to understand his father. You see him interacting with his brothers. And it's suddenly like, wow, the jigsaw pieces of time and history become so clear because psychologically you see how it can all happen. Yeah, and it's wild and wonderful. So I'm just looking forward to the staying in this family for a while.
All right.
And the music, the one difference is Fire and Fire takes place in the past, just a general past. But the Civil Strife in the fall, that's all contemporary. So you're in TV studios. It's a very different modern world.
All right. Well, we can't wait. It's always a pleasure to have you here, Barbara. Thank you so much for coming in. Artistic director Barbara Gaines, it's her play Tug of War, Foreign Fire. That's part one. Civil Strife will be this fall. That's part two. It's on stage at Chicago Shakespeare right now. It is really the centerpiece of Shakespeare 400 Chicago and the celebration or the honor of the 400th anniversary of Shakespeare's death. Barbara, thanks for being here.
Thanks, Jess.
How great was that? Gosh, Barbara's so passionate. To have a conversation, I mean, you know, I say this all the time, and I feel like I'm a broken record, but it's so great in Chicago to have people like Barbara Gaines and other people who are so passionate about what they do, and to have a Shakespeare theater in Chicago that is premier, if not, you know, the best in the country, you know, competes for the best in the world. And it's just really great to have access to those people to come in studio and talk about what, you know, sort of the ideas behind some of the greatest artists in the world. So that was really great. That being said, it's time to pick nicknames. It's a great transition. Picnic is up next. I'm excited about this. Joel Reese is here. We're going to pick two nicknames tonight. And I know Rob Martier has been working on this for a long time. Esmeralda is actually going to be the one who picks the winners for Pedro Strop and Addison Russell. Those are our two. We already got a ton coming in. 312-981-7200. We have prizes to give away tonight for the people who can choose nicknames for Pedro Strop and Addison Russell.
And I guess that's why I bleed Cubby Blue. Hey, hey, holy cow, Bernie, let's play too. The fans on the pavement wait for home runs on Waveland. There's no better day spent. Cubs are my enslavement. And I guess
That's sultry. That's hot. Welcome to the download. It's 10 o'clock on Tuesday nights here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. All right, you know what that means. It's time for Picnic. This is a new segment we've been doing all month long where we are picking nicknames, authentic, legitimate nicknames for our 2016 Chicago Cubs because we got to be able to call them something when they're on the field in October. That's the plan. We've had three great weeks of coming up with nicknames for several players. We'll go over those in just a second. But tonight, we've decided to give nicknames to two primetime players. We're stepping up our game here on the download. All right. So first is going to be setup man, Pedro Strop. Already getting great stuff coming in at 312-981-7200. Pedro Strop. And second is going to be star shortstop Addison Russell. That should be an easy one for you at home. Addison Russell. In studio with me, Joel Reese. Joel writes for BP Wrigleyville, and he's one of the hosts of BP Wrigley Cast, which is the podcast, Baseball Perspective, of course. Joel, good to see you. Thanks
hey,
for being here,
sir,
man.
Thanks for having me.
So you're our color you're the guy who like is going to give us some good facts about these players.
Okay, I'll do what I can.
All right, before we do that, I feel like it's almost becoming, I think, you know, commonplace to introduce Rob Martyr, who has been a tremendous, tremendous player in Picnic. It's unbelievable the amount of research and just passion you bring to this, Rob.
Well, it's good to be here on the show once again, Justin. Thank you so much again for having me.
One day at a time. One day at a time,
backs against the wall, 110%. You know how it goes. Right. Hoping to force a game seven.
So before we get your logic to some of these nicknames, also want to introduce Esmeralda Leon, who's here. Esmeralda, it is her job at the end of this to pick the winners. Esmeralda, how are you feeling tonight?
I feel good.
Can you give us any indication of your mood?
Oh. You know what? That doesn't factor in.
No, it doesn't.
I separate it.
You're professional.
If I'm feeling, yeah.
You rise above it.
Personal and professional, two totally different things.
Just trying to get anything that the listeners who might want to play to Esmeralda's tastes.
I like catchy.
All right. So
give me something catchy.
Something pithy. Catchy. Pithy?
Yeah. Or pithy just catchy? And catchy.
Pithy and catchy.
Two of my favorite things.
All right. Good. All right, Joel. So before we hear Rob's research project he's been working on all night, What do we need? Let's start with Pedro Strop. What do we need to know about Pedro Strop?
Pedro Strop is... also came over from the Baltimore Orioles in the Jake Arrieta trade. So not only did they get one of the best pitchers of the last however many years for the immortal Scott Feldman and the unforgettable Steve Clevenger. Steve Clevenger, that's just a name that screams like bad baseball player, isn't it?
He's
like,
got a mustache.
Like George Mitterwald.
Right.
You know, just like, you know, Steve Clevenger is never going to be Hall of Fame bound.
Right.
Just not in the cards.
He'd be great for this picnic if he was still on the team. Clevy.
So they got Pedro Strop and Jake Arrieta for these guys. And Strop has been a valuable member of the bullpen. He's got a great sinker. He's got one of the most unhittable sliders in the game. He's got a good fastball. He's been a good middle reliever, middle to late reliever. They tried him as a closer, and I just don't know if he has the mentality to be a closer, because you have to be kind of crazy.
Yeah,
you know?
he gets from afar, he gets a little emotional, he gets a little cocky on the mound.
Well, he's got, you know, the thing that the old school guys don't like is he wears his hat to the side. So that might be something that will play into the nickname people who are phoning and texting in here, is that he wears his hat askew.
Okay.
So there's a word right there. Maybe that comes in somewhere.
Strop askew.
But the old school people who talk about respect in the game don't like that. And he does get fired up. But he is a good pitcher. I don't know that he'll ever be a closer. Maybe not. But he's a valuable, definitely a valuable addition to the bullpen.
Okay, Rob Martyr. Hearing that information, what did you learn tonight about Pedro Strop?
Well, you know my MO in this game that we like to play here weekly on the download. I like to go deep. I like to see where these guys are from. I like to kind of get into their heads, into their backgrounds. So Pedro Strop is from San Cristobal in the Dominican Republic.
Okay.
It boasts a lot of things, but namely ballplayers is their chief export to the United States.
Okay.
One of their ballplayers that they exported to the United States, a guy by the name of Raul Mondesi, who spent most of his 13 seasons, as we know, with the L.A. Dodgers, and indeed a great player. Raul is now the mayor of San Cristobal in the Dominican Republic.
Okay.
So I'm going to bring this back around, and I'm going to call Pedro the Mayor Strop.
The mayor. I think you should be like the deputy mayor, since Mondesi's already the mayor.
Yeah.
But Mondesi's term, it's a 6-year term for mayor of that particular town. It actually ends this year.
By the way, this entire research project, do you have a poster board drawing that you did?
but I brought it back around.
Beautiful mind.
I brought it back around to San Cristobal.
Have you storyboarded this, Rob?
I'm working on it.
You're working on it. Okay. All right. So I like the mayor.
Got a few concepts.
The mayor is in. All right. 312-981-7200 is the number. Let's take a quick break. We'll get everything lined up. We'll get through some of the text here for Pedro Strop. Why don't we do it this way? We do Strop from 10 to 10:30, and then we'll do Addison Russell from 10:30 to 11. So let's continue with Pedro Strop, 312-981-7200. What do we think? What is his nickname? It's Picnic here on the download. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN Radio. In studio with me, Joel Reese. He's with BP Wrigleyville. He also does the BP Wrigley Cast podcast for Baseball Perspectives Wrigleyville. We're talking about nicknames. It's Picnic, Pedro Strop, and Addison Russell. The texts are coming in. 312-981-7200. We're giving away. Here's what we're giving away. We'll give away a Lou Malnati's. You know what? We'll do two Lou Malnati's pizzas tonight. What do you think of that? So if you pick Pedro Strop's nickname or Addison Russell's nickname, you're going to get a pizza. That's pretty great for you just going, oh, I got a good nickname.
Yeah, hey, here's something. I'm going to call in.
I just wish that I would have, I think in my life, like my non-radio life, I wish I would have paid attention more to nighttime radio just for the perks.
Just for like the pizzas?
Yeah, like I just feel like, you know, I moved too quick to like TV or something at 10:20. Yeah. Watching the weather, and I'm like, oh man, if I would have stuck around and come up with a nickname, I would have got a pizza.
Free pizza, yeah.
Idiot. You know,
the road less traveled.
Exactly. Right? All right, Joel. So Pedro Strop, what are you thinking about? What do you like? Let's talk about what you're thinking. What's your thought process when it comes to nicknames?
Well, you know, we were talking about this a little bit during the break. You know, there's the obvious things. Like I go for like things that sound like Strop. Strop in the name of love. The Supremes. So, but Strop in the name of love, that doesn't work. Esmeralda, I can see her kind of like too long. She's like, no, not feeling
it.
It's not pithy enough. And I get that. So, so that's the first thing I thought of. But you know, also if you think about good nicknames, like I think about like the Southside Hitmen, mm-hmm. you know, the White Sox, it was at the 70s. You know, it's kind of oblique. Like it doesn't have to be so literal.
Right.
You know, the Big Red Machine, that's what the Cincinnati Reds were in the mid 70s. So I'm trying to think of a distinctive characteristic of Pedro Strop. He doesn't have the big ears that Carlos Marmol had.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, like I said, he wears his hat askew. So I feel like there's something there. So that's a
okay.
clue.
All right. So there's a clue. It's really got to involve the hat. Let's go to the text. Pete, what do you think of this one? 773 says, Stroparino.
Yeah.
He just does that for every name. Like for Addison Ralph, he's going to be like, Russellarino.
Yeah, see, that's what you got to avoid that kind of stuff.
Rizzarino.
Esmeralda's not going for that.
Yeah, she's like disgusted. No.
It's too easy.
What I know about Esmeralda is she's going for the clever.
Yeah.
She's
going
to like the clever here.
Yeah. Okay.
I think you'll like this one. This one, Pedro Strop, White Castle, because he's got the hottest and best slider in baseball.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's right? A good one, because he has one of the most unhittable sliders. When it's on, one of the most unhittable sliders in baseball.
How about that?
So,
and then can you say something about, like, with cheese on it?
if he gets, like, a big strikeout. Yeah. Like, with cheese!
Yeah, it's got some extra sauce!
That could work. All right, let's go to 773.
Yeah, I like
says,
that one.
The Stroper, like the stripper, I think is what they're going for. That doesn't make any sense.
Okay.
630 says no stroke Strop. So I guess that's like no stroke, like no stroke, like you can't hit him.
Okay. I'm not really sure where he's going with that one.
This is a big one. This is one that I've seen a couple times now. Rope-a-dope.
Rope-a-dope Strop.
Rope-a-dope. Pedro Rope-a-dope Strop. Because as 262 says, Muhammad Ali used this to set up his opponent. And Pedro Strop is a setup man.
Yeah.
So maybe there's something there. I kind of like that. We've got the interloper. That's a little that might go a little too far off.
Is it because it rhymes with Strop and
I think so.
Maybe interloper kind of coming in the middle of the game?
Right.
I don't know. It's a stretch.
I'm a big fan of this one, even though it makes no sense to me. Diesel.
Yeah, you said that.
606 just says Diesel. I kind of like that as just like a nickname, though. Like, if you know, like going against the grain, not trying to be all clever and cute.
Yeah.
Here comes Diesel.
Yeah.
He's bringing
the
diesel.
Yeah.
He's got gas.
Yeah.
He's got that high octane gas.
Esmeralda, any thoughts from the judges?
It's all right. It's all right. It's got a feel. All right, let's go to the phones. Let's go to Pam. Pam, what do you like
I'm sorry.
What?
Oh, well, I got two things. First of all, I got Russell the Muscle Man, and then I've got Strope, the Pope of Hope. Strope is the Pope of Hope, and Russell, I could see, could be the Muscle Man, okay. And we got to keep him short and sweet.
Yeah. I like that a lot,
Pam. That's my thought.
I love that.
Yeah, I'm sure you do, and I'm sure you're being kind to me, and I appreciate that.
Pam, what have have I ever been I'm not lying with my, I like that. I like
I know
muscle.
That. I just love, I love the whole thing of it. I've loved the Cubs since I was 8 years old, and we won't say how many years ago that was. But it was a long time ago.
I appreciate it.
It was in Ernie Banks and Ron Santo, and but yeah, they're my heart. But I'm like, I don't even know the guy's names, but you guys said Strope. I said, hey, Pope of Hope. Strope.
I like that, Pope of Hope.
Yeah. Russell is the muscle. You know, don't give him the hustle. Get off it. And then I'll go on and rhyme and rhyme. So you got to shut me up.
That's really how you do it. Thanks a lot there, Pan. That's amazing. I'll say I like muscle for Russell. That's good. All right, so Beef Stroopwafel just came in. I like that one a lot. Stroopwafel.
I mean, yeah.
Because just think of what you could bring to the park. So when Pedro Strope comes in, you've got like a big
terrine
prop. Yeah, prop bowl of beef stroganoff. And yeah. You wear like a chef's hat, like maybe the Chef Boyardee look, and you're like, oh, the chef's hat for it's beef stroopwafel time.
Yeah, that's, man, you could do restaurant tie-ins.
There's a lot going on there. Okay. All right, here's good. 705 says Pedro Strope nickname PS, but it's for his initials.
Yeah.
And because he
like the sound of a fastball.
Because he says I'm not going to use that word, but he's like but he makes other players mad because he wears his hat to the side. So he's psing them off.
Yeah, I gotcha.
You got it?
Mm-hmm.
That one Pedro Poppy? I don't know. Poppy, 708. Like,
P-O-P-P-Y? Like the opium base?
Right, I don't. Yeah, I think so. Okay. 312 says, P.S. I love you. 309 says, Stroper Ace. That's pretty good. I love that movie.
Yeah.
I'm a Stroker Ace guy. I'm a Burt Reynolds NASCAR kind of guy.
Yeah,
if you didn't know that about me, that's my favorite Burt Reynolds.
I can see it.
It's just, there's just something about it. He's such a smart aleck NASCAR driver.
Yeah.
You know, that's what we need more of.
Right. That's right.
Oh, 815 says interloper because he runs along with the runoff.
He did that a couple times. He did it with Chris Bryant last year and someone else this year. He comes running in from the bullpen and then runs down the third base line with the guy doing kind of a Monty Python.
Yeah.
So
maybe there's 847 says strobe light because his pitches are blinding.
Strobe light, yeah.
We also have Jock Strope. I'm not sure that one's gonna stick, right?
That's gonna hold.
that's pretty
courtesy
dumb.
Laugh there. Yeah. Thanks, Pete.
All right, so I think that's it on the. Just going through one more time. Strope light got a couple here. The Dominican Nightmare. Whoa. That's really getting that's generic and specific.
Strope floats.
Pedro Big Papa. Heat Strope.
Oh, that's
what if you call
good.
Him Heat?
Yeah. Yeah, that's good because they Esmeralda, a fastball is when they bring the heat. So there's a kind of a dual.
So Esmeralda, baseball is this game that's played with a ball.
The throw and the bat.
Where do they play it?
They play it in a field.
What?
Of dreams.
That mean in their minds?
In their minds. All right. I think that's it on the Pedro Strope. These are really good. Thank you to everyone who come in. Okay, so we're going to make a transition. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, it's Addison Russell. We already got one for Addison Russell, which is muscle. I like that. From Pam. And we'll get Rob Martyr's take, and we'll continue, and we'll sort of pick the best of the Stropes. and the Stropes. Maybe there's a Strokes.
The Strokes, yeah.
And there's like a, what's that guy's name? Casablanca?
Julian Casablanca,
Casablanca?
Casablancas, I think. Something like that.
Maybe that's a little too far.
Might be.
Joel Reese is in studio with me. We'll continue after the news. Addison Russell, 312-981-7200.
Hey, hey, Chicago, the Cubs are gonna shine. Hey, hey, Chicago, the Cubs will blow your mind. The boys in blue are back and really slamming. The friendly confines of Wrigley Field are jamming. Hey, hey.
I only picture, like in my head, I'm like, I know these are all different artists that are singing these awesome Cubs songs, but I have a feeling they all record with Pete in his basement. Like, I feel like Zimmerman's like, that's the one. We got it, guys. He's in the, I always feel like he's in the window, like with his thumb up, like, that's a great track. You guys nailed this Cubs parody song once again. All right, we're playing Picnic here. 312-981-7200. Joel Reese is in studio with me. Thanks for coming down. Joel sure. Reese from BP Wrigleyville, and he also does the podcast for the BP Wrigley Cast. We are giving nicknames to Pedro Strope and to Addison Russell. Addison Russell, what do we know about Addison Russell?
Well, he was also acquired by the Cubs in a trade, a big trade. The Cubs traded Jeff Samardzija to the Oakland A's for him, and they traded Jason Hamill also, and they got Hamill back. And
yeah, right.
Addison Russell, I know Billy Beane was very reluctant to give him up. He at one point called Addison Russell the best prospect he's ever had. And wow. So Russell has he's amazing on the field, amazing defender, like amazing defense. He's got range and instincts like you wouldn't believe. He doesn't have exactly a cannon for an arm, but he just makes phenomenal plays. His hitting was coming along really well early in the season. He had a bunch of big hits, won some games with late inning hits, homers, triples, but has kind of slumped the last couple of weeks, like almost everyone did, except for before tonight. So. That's kind of my background on him.
All right, Rob Martier, what do you got on Addison Russell?
You know what? This one I'm keeping very simple. There's no kind of roundabouts, you know, circuitous route I'm going to take for a nickname. He signed a national letter of intent to play at Auburn University. Now, he never got there, but as you know, Auburn University, they're the Tigers. So I'm going to go with Addison, the Tiger Russell.
The Tiger.
Easy peasy lemon squeezy.
Yeah.
The Tiger.
I love it. All right. There, so what are you thinking, Joel? What do you like for Addison Russell?
I mean, I think that one's pretty good. You know, he's really good with the leather. So he flashes the leather, so you could call him Flash. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he'd like to be called Mr. Leather. Maybe that's not his thing.
No, that's, yeah. There's a lot of endorsements there.
You think so?
He could get a lot of sponsorship opportunities, especially if it was international.
Yeah.
Right. Think about that.
Yeah. You know, I'm sure he'll take it under advisement. Yeah. And, you know, I was trying to work with something several years ago, the Detroit Pistons had a guard named Chauncey Billups who would hit a lot of, he was very clutch. They called him Mr. Big Shot. So I was trying to work with that, with Addison Russell, because he was getting a lot of clutch hits. But you can't really work with Mr. Big Shot. Mr. Big Hit doesn't quite, right. You know, doesn't have the same panache. So I was working with something with that. So something with clutch. I'm just throwing those out there for the listeners.
Okay. Here's what I've got from listeners that are coming in. I got 708 Hustle. That's good for Addison Hustle Russell.
Sure.
We've got 630 The Gladiator, Russell Crowe.
Oh, okay.
Okay. I like this one. 815 Addison Earned Run Russell. I don't know why that's applied to him.
Earned
Run. No.
Yeah.
I like this one too. 773. This might be a winner here. I like this one a lot. 773. We call Addison Russell Smooth Criminal because of the song "Addie, Are You Okay?" Are you okay? It's Annie. Are you okay? But
that's pretty. And he's a super smooth fielder.
Yeah.
And he steals.
You've been struck by Addison Russell. Dun 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 dun. Dun. No.
Yeah, it's good.
It's got a feel.
Yeah, I like that one a lot. That's good because he's smooth. He steals hits from the other players. Mm-hmm. You know, it works on many levels.
Okay. We had Pam did muscle, which there's been a lot of muscles in here, right, which is pretty good. But the problem with calling him muscle is he's not like a Sammy Sosa ripped steroid guy. He's a very thin kind of. He looks like he's 14 years old.
He does. You know, he's married, and I believe he has at least one kid. So he's like 22. You know, so.
I don't tell you about biology. They can have kids at a young age.
We can talk about that off the air, I guess.
That's why he didn't go to Auburn. You know, he had a kid or something.
Hmm.
Or he's just a spectacular baseball player who didn't need to go to college.
Yeah, that could be
that
it.
That probably has more to do with it.
Yeah.
312-981-7200. Sidewinder. Maybe that's for Strope. Slidewinder. Slidewinder.
Slidewinder. Hmm.
How about Big Deal? Like from Star Wars. I'm not sure. Is there a Big Deal?
Is there a Star Wars Big Deal?
Big Deal.
Is there a Star Wars connection? With
847's got a good one. Clark.
Clark and Addison.
Yeah, so like call him Clark.
Yeah.
Hmm. We're not really liking the street. It's almost like it's almost too easy.
Yeah, it's
Addison.
Too on the nose, as they say in the business.
Mm-hmm.
How about Rawhide? I mean, if he's good with the leather.
Rawhide.
Rawhide Russell.
And he could do that song when he comes to bat.
Yeah, they'd probably love that.
Yeah. There's a lot of Addison to Sheffield. Dolly Addison. Instead of Dolly Madison.
Yeah.
Hmm. I'm trying to think. I feel like we're missing, like, okay, so he is on Addison.
Right.
Addison, Russell, Addison.
Addison is what, 4,400 north?
3,600.
36,
north.
Right.
So let's say 3,600. 3,600. There you go.
36. 36 is 6 squared.
I like 3,600.
Yeah. All right, there we go.
There we go.
Esmeralda, there's the winner. 3,600.
Hey, 3,600. All right, let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll get the winners and keep coming with the Addison Russell. Like, oh, I like the Addison Russell. 312's got a good one for Clark and Addison. Crossroads.
You know?
I don't know. But then you start thinking like it's the blues track.
Robert Johnson.
Yeah, the Robert Johnson. And maybe he's in the blues, and I don't know if that works.
Yeah.
312-981-7200. Keep them coming. Addison Russell. What's his nickname? So download. Stay with us. All right. It's nice return music here. I think that may be a little bit spoiling the bunch in the way that Smooth Criminal is just one of the choices here, Pete. So now I feel like you're adding in, like, I don't know if that's fair to the others. Like, the Pacer, born in pace, and he's consistent clutch. The Pacer. Addison Russell, 630, says Addison Russell, L's.
L? Like, I think L. Yeah. Stop.
How about Addison Big D Russell? I don't know about that.
Yeah, well, you know.
I did see there's a lot of pace. There's been some research done by our listeners. Mm-hmm. He was born in Pace, Florida. The Pacer. Addison the Mitt Russell.
The Glove.
815 says Dr. Zach Addy. It's a Bones reference. But I like that because you're like, ooh, Dr. Addy. And then the fans show up dressed like Dr. Zach Addy. I don't know who that is. I think it's the guy from Buffy.
Oh, okay.
Addison Transit. We got a baby face, 773. It's already been used for Javi Baez. So they're coming in. They're still coming in. Let's go to Cookie on the line. Cookie, what do you like for Addison Russell?
Kid Glove.
Kid Glove.
Kid Glove. Oh, I see. Yeah.
I like that.
Because he's young and he plays good defense.
Yes.
All right.
We're on the same page, Cookie. I'm feeling it.
Cookie, thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye. I like Cookie. I mean, I like the nickname, Cookie.
And cookies. And they're delicious.
Yeah. All right. Let's see here. And then Scoop. How about Scoop?
Yeah.
I like
that's something
one.
Defenders do.
Scoop. But he kind of looks like a scoop. He's like a little guy. He could see maybe, like, if he wasn't in baseball, he'd be a newspaper reporter.
Throwing him onto your porch.
773 really likes Ruski. I think that's for rookie. But he's not really a rookie anymore.
No.
He's a second year guy.
Right.
And he's not Russian.
No, as far as I know.
Addison,
I
mean, Russell. He's from Pace, Florida.
Yeah.
Okay. Add a run read. That's what Rich says.
Oh, on, yeah, Rich.
Add a run. I don't know.
Because it's playing off Addison.
Yeah.
Add a run. Yeah.
Hmm. Okay.
All right, is it time to, is it time
it's about time. 1060 West. That's the, is that Wrigley Field? Yeah, 1060
yeah, that's West. Yeah.
See, that's pretty good. That goes along mine like 36 Hundo.
Yeah.
What if you call them 36 Hundo?
Yeah.
Like it's cooler.
That's way cooler.
Like a, like, you know, like a rapper would say it. 36 Hundo. Like a cool Mo D.
Cool Mo D.
He would be like 36 Hundo.
He was great.
Going that's downtown.
Serious old school, though.
Yeah, that is. That's a good one.
Wild, wild, all right. West.
Wild West. All right. So I think we got, I mean, let's try, let's do one more call. Let's do Marge. Marge, what do you like?
Street cred.
Street cred.
Street cred.
Why because street cred?
Because of Addison.
And then
the
cred.
Street. And he's a credit to the organization.
Hey! You put it together. Thank you so much, Marge. Oh, I cut her off. Sorry. Thought she was done.
Sorry, Marge.
The Shuffler. 262 says the Shuffler. All right.
Okay.
All right. Let's.
All right. Are we putting up for the judges?
Yeah, we're going to do it. Here we go.
All right.
All right. First, Pete, let me read you what I have. Joel and Pete, we'll do this fast, and then we're going to get to Esmeralda, and she's going to make the choice here.
Yeah.
For Pedro Strop, here's what I got. We've got, number one, White Castle, because he's got the best slider in the business.
Yeah.
Number two, Sidekick, because he has the hat to the side, and he also kicks really high with his leg.
Mm-hmm.
We also have Heat. We also have Diesel. And then we have Beef Stroganoff. There's a lot of opportunities there. What do you like, Joel?
Yeah. I don't know. It's tough to go against Beef Stroganoff. But I don't know. The White Castle, I mean, that's, you know. That's pretty good.
Pete, what are you thinking?
I agree with Joel. I love Beef Stroganoff. That just sounds so fun, but I'm going to go White Castle White as Castle. Well.
All right, so let's do Addison Russell real quick. Here's what I got for Addison Russell. You know, I'm gonna put Street Cred in there because I like that one. Also, just got one in, which I really like, 606 Scooby. I don't know why Scooby, but that's kind of a cool nickname for a player.
Mm-hmm.
I just like that it's a cool nickname for a player. Okay, so here's what we got. We got Flash. We got Muscle, Addison the Muscle Russell. We've got Kid Love, Street Cred, and Smooth Criminal. It's Kid Glove, sorry. Kid Love. Kid Glove. So Flash, Muscle, Kid Glove, Street Cred, and Smooth Criminal. What do you like?
I think Smooth Criminal is the
pretty good.
Runaway winner.
What do you got, Pete?
Same.
All right. You guys don't count. Let's all right. Esmeralda Leon, how are you?
Yeah, good.
All right, so you've been listening to this. You've been weighing in with your thoughts.
Yes.
Here we go. For Pedro Strop and Addison Russell, do we like, for Pedro Strop, Sidekick, Heat, Diesel, White Castle, or Beef Stroganoff?
It has to be White Castle.
White Castle is the winner.
That's a good one. I like that one.
Nice job, White Castle.
The Stroganoff was in a close, very close.
There's just
second.
So many opportunities with the Stroganoff, the Stroganoff and the Stroganoff. You could
I like the Chef Boyardee idea.
Yeah.
You could be like, and you'd always get on camera with that. They're like, oh, and you're like mixing up some pasta, putting in the Parmesan or whatever's in the Stroganoff.
Yeah, you could have the Food Network tie-in.
Yeah.
I mean, just like the
there's so many things.
Are limitless.
Although there could also be a problem of throwing egg noodles onto the field.
Yeah.
Like, in Detroit with the octopus.
Yeah, like if he does well, you throw the egg noodles on. That could be good.
Yeah.
All right, so for Addison Russell, here we go. Do we like Flash, Muscle, Kid Glove, Street Cred, or Smooth Criminal?
I like Smooth Criminal.
Smooth Criminal!
Yeah,
because you have that option, so that's good. I like that.
And you could do a lot with that, because I do think that makes up for, again, we could dress up like Michael, we can dress up like MJ and Smooth Criminal in the video and like all of his henchmen.
Yeah.
And we could do all like kind of side dance all the way to the side and then the other way like he does that cool like lean. And then we can get some camera time.
Yeah.
So like when Addison Russell comes up to bat, they all come to us and we're like already dancing because we got our cool white mobster suit on.
Yeah, that's right? Fame for everyone. And great walk-up music too.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
So, yeah.
There we go. White Castle for Pedro Strop, the best slider in the business, and Smooth Criminal because it's criminal the way that Addison Russell plays defense and steals bases, although he doesn't steal as much as he should. Joel Reese is the man behind BP Wrigleyville, or part of the crew.
Yeah.
Also does the podcast BP Wrigleycast. Can't thank you enough for coming down here.
Sure.
Good to see you, Joel. We'll do this again this summer.
Sounds good.
All right, that's going to do it tonight. Congrats to all the winners for Smooth Criminal. And I already forgot, White Castle. Right, Smooth Criminal and White Castle. They're going to win Lou Malnati's gift certificate. Lou Malnati's is home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza.
Dumb.
Find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations or order online at loumalnati's.com. You're not too happy, Rob.
Well, now I know exactly how Steve Gavlin feels. This is ridiculous.
I mean, you had good idea. You did the most research, but it just felt like there was a little bit more. There was just cleverness brought by some of the
when you
listeners.
Put out a nickname, it's got to be quick. Preferably one word.
Mm-hmm.
Tiger, killer, the shark. That's it.
White Castle.
Yeah, too many.
It's enough.
For what?
No, it's enough.
No, it's not.
White Castle.
No.
Now you can go slider.
I got to do the news.
All right. That's going to do it for the show. Patty Vasquez up next here. Pretty late with Patty Vasquez. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com.